bad mic. Good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled December 13th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We conferred with legal counsel regarding one item of anticipated litigation. We also had discussion regarding public employee appointment of the assistant superintendent and conferred with our labor negotiators regarding the superintendent. And it was discussion only. No action was taken. I'm seeking approval on consensus. Let's see, on the consensus on the order of business. There is one change that I'd like to propose. Under presentations after point 5.02, I would like to move item 9.01. To occur immediately following 5.02, if that's agreeable to the board.
I'm sorry.
We're in favor of that? Okay. And otherwise, do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm seeking approval of the minutes of November 15th, 16. A motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. I'm seeking approval of the minutes of 11-22-16.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That also passes unanimously. And then finally, approval of the minutes of December 6th.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Now we have student representatives to the board, of which we have one tonight from San Luis Obispo High School. Bear with me. Every time we're together, I have this problem. It's Kanan Freyaldenhoven. Kanan Freyaldenhoven. Thank you for joining us tonight.
So currently at San Luis Obispo High School, we have a few things going on right now. This Friday, we actually have our blood drive. So we've had a fair amount of students sign up for that, and we're going to have basically, students get their blood drawn, and those will be donated. And then also coming up tomorrow, we have our monthly student congress meeting. And basically what this is we have students from across campus who are not a part of our associated student body to basically get together and share their ideas on the events coming up on campus and basically to disseminate what we have going on in ASB throughout the rest of the school. So we have that coming up tomorrow. And then next, actually, this is some of you may have heard about this, but we actually had a couple former students from San Luis Obispo High School start a fire nearby our ag department, which was very, very unfortunate. We're very sad to hear about that. And Mrs. Fesho's classroom, she's in charge of tech club and basically the computer science department at SLO High. That actually suffered quite a bit of damage. And the robotics and tech club, who she's the advisor of, actually lost a lot of what they had been working on. So that's another thing that's really sad to hear. However, I think they have set up a GoFundMe account. So basically what that is crowdfunding, essentially. And it's an online program where people can donate money to this cause. So that has been set out, and we currently have $25,000 in that account, which we're all very happy to hear. And that's basically going to go to fixing the damages that have happened to these two clubs and trying to get back what they had lost. So that's that's good, but of course we're very sad to hear how that situation happened. And lastly, we just have our sports going on in full swing. Basically, all winter sports are in regular season right now, and that's going well. And that's about it for Slow High. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any board comment? I would just ask the GoFundMe account for replacing the equipment for the robotics club. Are you aware of how people can reach that account if they wanted to?
Yes, there's actually a link to it. I apologize, I'm not sure of the link right now, but I can likely get the link from my ASB advisor and send it wherever it needs to go. So it's by link is how to get that.
Is it a www.gofundme.org
yes, I believe
or something?
So.
I think there's also a link on the San Luis Obispo, the Tribune, as well.
The Tribune has
the
a link to it?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for joining us and telling us what's going on at Slow High. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We know you have things to do. Oh, Mr. Unger.
Well, I just wanted to say I just looked up the the GoFundMe, and if you just go to GoFundMe and type in San Luis Obispo, it comes right up. And the first one is Friends of Slow High Robotics.
Okay, thank you. So you may feel free to leave at any time with our thanks. You're also welcome to stay and participate in the meeting if you choose. Thank you. Absolutely.
I just wanted to add that Stuart Cooper of, I just had his business, his company has been involved in donating robotic equipment for the robotics team, and they're volunteering to replace the robotics that were lost. The sign place has agreed to provide a replacement banner because the team banner was destroyed, and so we're getting a lot of support in a lot of different ways, and it's been amazing the support from the community.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
And along those lines, I ran into a professor from Cal Poly, a professor in the computer department yesterday, and they had already among themselves decided they were going to be donating somewhere between 12 and 20 computers to the school as well.
So it's wonderful to see the community really rise up and support those students. It should be noted that, you know, our insurance covers the loss. And so there will be replacement, but these supplemental funds will be put to good use in the computer lab and by the robotics team. So now we move to item 9.01. Okay, I'm off here. Oh, 5.02. I am wondering, Dr. Prater, is Mr. Daniels with us?
I do not see him yet. If we could table that item for when he arrives, he has to go to multiple meetings tonight. So
okay.
If we could for now, just move to the next item.
Okay, and Mr. Daniels is a representative of Pacific Gas and Electric Company. So we'll revisit this when he arrives. Item 9.01. There was a time I could count, is a resolution. Resolution number 08-16-17, School District Safe Zone. And I'm going to ask Mrs. Sheffer, who authored this resolution, to read it for us, please.
Thank you. Whereas students and parents have expressed fear, anxiety, and confusion regarding the ability of the Office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement to enter property of San Luis Coastal Unified School District for the purpose of determining legal status of students and their families, and whereas an environment of fear, anxiety, and confusion is not conducive to student achievement, student emotional well-being, the desire for families to participate in school activities and best support their children, and the belief that district staff and administration will provide a safe environment for students and their families. And whereas, under the equal protection rights of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, no public school district may deny children access to education based on their immigration status. And whereas a mission of the Board of Education of San Luis Coastal Unified School District is to ensure that each student be provided with the opportunity and support to meet his or her potential. And whereas the board believes that the physical safety and emotional well-being of all children is provided by ensuring that our schools and offices are safe and inviting for all students and their families. And whereas operations and activities by the Office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement in and around schools, school district offices, early education centers, and adult school facilities would be disruptive to the learning environment and educational settings for students. And whereas the board believes that our students' ability to achieve and thrive is negatively impacted by the fear of removal and actual removal of their family members during raids conducted by the Office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement that leave students without supervising adults to care for them. And whereas there is no written state or federal law that mandates that local districts assist the Office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement in the enforcement of immigration laws, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Education of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District declares that every school district site is a safe place for its students and their families to seek help, assistance, information, and safety if faced with fear and anxiety about related immigration enforcement efforts, and be it further resolved that the superintendent shall establish all pre-K through 12 early education centers, adult schools, parent centers, and administrative offices as resource and information sites for students and their families, and that the Board of Education encourages the superintendent to increase and enhance partnerships with organizations and services that provide resources for families facing deportation, and that a network be created to assist children whose family members have been detained, and be it further resolved that in order to provide a public education, regardless of a child or family's immigration status, and absent any applicable federal, state, or local law, regulation, ordinance, or court decision, the district shall not inquire about a student's immigration status, including that of family members. And be it further resolved that the superintendent shall ensure that all teachers, school administrators, and other staff will be trained on how to implement this policy, and notification shall be distributed to families to fully inform them of their rights in the district. And be it finally resolved that any officer from the Office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement intending to enter any San Luis Coastal Unified School District property must first notify the superintendent of its intention with adequate notice so that the superintendent can take steps to provide for the emotional and physical safety of its students and staff. Passed and adopted this 13th day of December 2016 on the following roll call vote.
Is there any discussion of this resolution? Does any member of the public wish to speak to this resolution?
Yes.
Young man, please.
We do have a speaker request from him, shall I say
that? We don't need him because he's doing it.
Good evening. My name is Camila Baltadano, and I am a fifth grader at Pacheco Elementary. I am here tonight to ask the board to please adopt the Safe Schools resolution. I followed the election very closely. My mom and dad used it as an opportunity to teach me about our government and politics, two things that a fifth grader should know. They know I'm going to vote in 8 years, and I need to be an educated voter. I was very disappointed with the tone of the election. It was hard for kids to understand how adults could behave so rudely. For example, when I read that a candidate made fun of a disabled person, I was offended. I have hearing loss, so that really hurt my feelings. I am also very upset about the things that have been said about immigrants. The Wednesday after the election, my class was a wreck. Kids in my class were scared that their parents would get deported and that our president-elect will build a wall. During the Pledge of Allegiance, my classmates looked like they were going to cry after we said one nation because it seems like there are two nations. We want our leaders to make us feel safe. Thank you for doing everything you can to keep me and my classmates safe, especially my classmates who are immigrants to our country. I urge you to adopt the Safe Schools Resolution.
Thank you very much.
Buenas noches.
Good evening.
Mi nombre es Angela Mayo. Soy representante de DILAC.
I'm Angela Mayo, and I'm a representative of DILAC.
Can you help me tonight, please?
Both? Okay. I'm Angela Mayo, and I'm a representative of DILAC.
Soy la presidenta del DILAC.
I'm the president of DILAC.
Estoy aquí porque todos los padres de familia latinos estamos muy preocupados con la...
I'm here because all Latino families, the parents, are very worried
acerca de la lo que el nuevo presidente dijo en su candidatura.
About what the president-elect has said during his campaign.
Y hay muchos padres de familias en las escuelas que están preocupados acerca de la deportación de los inmigrantes, y los niños también tienen muchas preocupaciones, en especial mis niños también.
So there's many parents and children that are very concerned about deportation for immigrants, including my own children.
Muchos padres de familia no quieren participar ahorita en la escuela porque tienen mucho miedo.
Many parents right now don't want to participate in school functions because they're scared.
Y yo he tratado de darles ánimos y decirle que el distrito nos está apoyando en esta manera.
So I've been trying to tell them to have courage and that the school district is supporting us in this way.
Que no debemos de tener miedo, que nosotros como latinos tenemos que seguir participando en las escuelas.
And that we have to keep participating, that we shouldn't be afraid, and that the Latino community needs to continue to be involved in school.
Porque hay miembros de la mesa directiva que saben la situación de cada uno de nosotros.
Because there's members of the school board that understand the situation of all of us.
Y le damos gracias que nos estén apoyando porque también nuestros niños necesitan la educación.
And so we thank you for supporting us because our children need their education.
Eso es todo por ahorita. Muchísimas gracias.
And that's it for now, but thank you so much.
Okay, is there anyone else who wishes to speak to this resolution? Okay, seeing no one, then I'll bring it back to the board. Is there board comment? Mr. Millar?
I have a couple of concerns about this resolution, and they have to do with my fear that we are actually going to heighten the fear among our families, Hispanic and Anglo families, because we have never evaluated the immigration status of a child that shows up at our schools, correct? So I think some of these things need to be understood. We've never done that. We're not going to start doing it. We have never had immigration come on our campuses to check the immigration status of children or their family members. In my 30-something years of being around this district, anybody have any information to the contrary? No? Okay. And so I don't want this unusual action, and it is an unusual action on our part, to signal that in some way that you should be more concerned. Our district has always protected kids and provided a safe place for them. We've always provided wraparound services, connections to community information, and we're going to keep doing that, particularly as the uncertainty begins to unfold over the next couple of months. So I just wanted to make sure that community members know that there is no imminent threat of these things happening. And I do know that the uncertainty itself feeds anxiety and fear, and that's very understandable. But within that anxiety, please keep in mind that none of these things have happened, and we will do our level best to prevent any of these things from happening. And with that, I would move approval of Resolution 081617.
So I have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Unger. Did you have comment, Mr. Buckman?
Yes, I do. I'm very, very proud of the board and support the resolution. We have 10 core beliefs that we've been working under for many years, and one of them is all means all, and we're watching out for everybody, and I think this totally supports what the board's been believes and has been doing for years.
Thank you. So then, Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Mrs. Roger, may I just pass something down? This is relevant to what we just passed.
So, okay.
We talked about the symbol of the safety pin a few weeks ago, and that when some people wear the safety pin, it's to signify that they are someone that can be trusted in case you need help. And so these are for each of the members of the school board. I know you already have one, Marilyn. That's a gigantic safety pin.
My safety pin is so large, it destroys my clothing.
And they don't sell these anymore. I tried to get one at a baby store, but apparently they're unsafe to use in diapers, so don't do that. But you can wear them on your lapel.
Thank you, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. That's really thoughtful. That's really thoughtful of you. Okay, so I've been informed that Mr. Daniels has joined us, so I would like to return to item 5.02. And invite Eric Daniels from Pacific Gas and Electric to speak.
Thank you, Madam President. Board, thank you very much for having me, and thanks for being flexible with the schedule for me. I'm hitting a number of city council meetings tonight. Eric Daniels with PG&E, Public Affairs. PG&E is privileged, just have a statement to read. PG&E is privileged to be part of the Central Coast community. We've been members of the community for over 100 years, and we will continue to be active members long into the future. Our shared goals for a healthy and strong community will keep PG&E engaged, working with you and your staff to sustain and grow our diverse economy. Upon the announcement of the upcoming retirement of Diablo Canyon Power Plant, we embarked in discussions with you, with your staff, on the future of these economic impacts. Your staff was tenacious in looking out for you and your constituents and the entire school district. Dr. Prater and Mr. Pinkerton should be commended for their efforts in this regard. In the end, we are pleased with the win-win results of our discussions. The settlement agreement will provide for $85 million in support for San Luis Obispo communities.
$75 million in tax mitigation to local jurisdictions, of which the school district is a major recipient. And then $10 million for economic development for local communities. Overall, the package also includes an employee retention and severance package worth approximately $520 million over its life, continued funding for emergency preparedness and planning in the area into the future, a commitment not to take action or make any decisions on reuse or sale of Diablo Canyon-related lands at this time, and 9 years of lead time to plan for the absorption to absorb this economic impacts. Sorry, my cold. We appreciated this opportunity to partner with the counties, with the cities, and with the other stakeholders, including the school district, in this important agreement, which will greatly assist in planning and preparing for a future without Diablo Canyon in operation. This is an important issue for us all, and we are pleased that we were all able to pull together. However, while we have the local settlements, the process is not yet complete. The Public Utilities Commission still has the final determination, and that's an important factor. So over the next few months, there will be additional hearings and opportunities for you as a board and individually, and for the community, to voice their continued support in this endeavor. I look forward to continuing to work together with you and your staff in this important issue as we work through the PUC process. Thank you very much. Be happy to entertain any questions if you had them.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board?
Thank
you. Well, then I would say I speak for the board in thanking Pacific Gas and Electric for negotiating in good faith to reach an agreement that really addresses the concerns of the school district and provide mitigation funds that will help us to plan effectively for how we're to proceed in the years after Diablo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let me get back to where I should be. We are, I think I'm pretty much done, guys. 6.01 is elect the president and clerk for 2017. This is our annual board reorganization meeting. At this point on the agenda, time is provided for the election of the clerk and president for the coming year. So I'll entertain nominations for president, please. Mrs. Sheffer.
Mr. Quesenberry, would you like to go ahead?
No, I'll defer to you.
All right, I'll do it.
I would like to nominate that Catherine Eisendrath Rogers serve as president of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board for the 2016-17 school year.
17-18.
Well, I don't know. It's like, a month of, our next president.
It is for the 2017 calendar year.
The 2017 calendar year.
That works.
I'll second that.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Quesenberry. All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Do I abstain?
You get to vote for yourself, of course.
Thank you.
So that passes unanimously, Mrs. Holmes. And now I am requesting nominations for clerk of the board for the same term.
I would nominate Chris Unger for board clerk.
I'll second.
Okay. Nomination by Mr. Millar, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That also passes unanimously. So at this time, I think we'll take a we'll adjourn for... Oh.
Yeah. Well, we received signature documents today, and they just came from the clerk recorder, so let's finish this little bit of ceremony, and then we can do a swearing-in of those of you who were reelected, and move.
Okay. Dr. Prater.
Yes. In recognition, this is a little bit of shared thoughtfulness for you, Mrs. Roger. So you became trustee in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District in December 2002, representing the coastal communities of Los Osos and Morro Bay. 14 years later, Mrs. Roger continues to serve San Luis Coastal as one of our most... I took that the other day. Isn't that nice? 14 years later, Mrs. Roger continues to serve San Luis Coastal as one of our most veteran and respected trustees. In my experience, Mrs. Roger takes her role as trustee very seriously and spends the requisite time to understand important issues impacting students, parents, and staff. Complexity is not lost on her either. Despite her Columbo approach, I mean that in an endearing way. I found her to be prescient and insightful about how the organization functions and best meets the needs of kids. She's a rabid San Francisco Giants fan, a mother of two wonderful San Luis Coastal graduates, a wife to Bob Roger, who is legendary, but I've never personally met, and someone who genuinely believes, Marilyn is someone who genuinely believes in public education and its role in providing a critical foundation to our youth. She's a fierce student advocate for those of you that don't know her, and she truly embraces all means all in both her words and her actions. I've enjoyed working with Mrs. Roger this past year as president. She has done a fantastic job behind the scenes to ensure our meetings remain focused and our mission to serve kids never got lost within the paperwork. As a parting gift and in recognition of Mrs. Rogers' distinguished service serving as president of the Board of Education during the past year, books will be placed in the libraries at Baywood Elementary, Del Mar Elementary, Monarch Grove Elementary, Los Osos Middle School, and Morro Bay High School, which are the schools within Mrs. Rogers' trustee areas. The following books were selected by our district librarian, Mrs. Sharon Haup: The Wild Robot by Peter Brown, Juliana and Lucas by Juana Medina, The Great American Whatever by Tim Federal, and Scythe, Ark of a Scythe by Neil Schusterman. In addition, Mrs. Holmes found this really cool trinket that I think you're going to enjoy. And Mrs. Roger, thank you. And we're all better because of you.
Oh, gosh, you guys. Well, very much.
Heart of gold, fist of steel.
That was really nice. Thank you so much. If I had known in advance, I just would have found I would have been ill tonight. I appreciate the thoughts. It's my pleasure to serve on this board, and I really believe that this is good work that we do, and that we, you know, public education needs to be supported, and we try our best to do that, and all students need to be supported, and all staff needs to be supported. And I think that, you know, as a board, we really do our best to meet all of those goals. So thank you very much for your kind words. And now we'll take a 5-minute recess so that we can shuffle our name tags and get on with the meeting. Oh, do you want me to open this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know what it is, but I understand that my friend Mrs. Holmes may have had a hand in it. I'm so shell. You know how I love the sparkly things. It is. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to figure out how to undo this. It's got a San Francisco Giants.
She has the world's greatest Giants fan.
I am. I've got my aquatic candlesticks from about 1970. It's a San Francisco Giants necklace to go with my necklace that I received the first time I served as board president. Mm. It's lovely, and I thank you so much for it. It's really thoughtful.
And before we break, could I have Mr. Millar, Dr. Catherine Eisendrath-Roger, and Mr. Unger, please stand for oath of office. So repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Catherine Eisendrath-Roger.
Do solemnly swear or affirm. That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
And I will do the about to enter. Good one, Rob. Thank you all.
Congratulations.
Madam President. Congratulations.
I was thinking that last part of the year.
I know, I was so focused.
Okay, I guess we're moving along then to item number 6.04. We're going to appoint board members to committees and liaison posts.
Board calendar.
Board calendar. Oops, 6.03. Board calendar, ma'am. And then 6.04.
Oh, I see that. I'm so sorry. 6.0. No, thank you. Thank you. I'm a neophyte here. And these are such big shoes, but not really to fill. It's tiny feet and big shoes. Okay, we're now going to the to adopt the 2017 board meeting calendar, which is attached, and looking toward.
So, I'm sorry. So
Dr. Prater.
This calendar reflects a little bit of an adjustment, and it requires a bit of a strategic dialogue in that we. We normally had our board study sessions scheduled on Fridays, and while that seemed to work for the board, our organization was having challenges in that when we had the board study session, the following week is typically a board meeting. And so the purpose of the board study session is to give the board ample opportunity to study any issues that they might act upon in the following board meeting. Mm-hmm. So it gives them a chance to understand things more deeply and ask questions. Well, what was happening was the agenda for the following Tuesday's meetings posted typically by noon on Friday. Well, that's when the Measure D study session typically ended. Well, what was happening from the office perspective is that we were scattered, trying to pull together any decisions or discussions or changes on that future item that would end up in a board meeting, and it's causing a bit of a stir. So the idea would be that we would move the Measure D study sessions to Thursdays, and now this is where it gets a little nuanced. And then what we would do, instead of having board walks twice a month, What we would do is, because of the Brown Act issue that we are all confronted with, what we were suggesting is that we would have boardwalks once a month, but at two separate times, an a.m. and a p.m. And then the board, six board members, could choose on any given month to either the a.m. or the p.m., and the majority of the board would be able to attend a boardwalk on that day. So, in effect, we wouldn't have two boardwalks a month. We'd have one boardwalk a month, but at two sites. And then the other Thursday, which used to be a boardwalk date, would be a Measure D study session. Did you follow that?
Yep.
So that's reflected in this this calendar, and I leave it to the board for discussion.
Well, first of all, the colors for board meeting and workshop are too similar. It's hard for me to kind of.
Mr. Buckman, you have a comment.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the shift to Thursdays, and I would. And just like the public to know how dedicated this board is and what a pleasure just to work with them, because the public gave us this tremendous support for Measure D, and the board then, and I think through the direction of the superintendent, set up these workshops, which means we were meeting one Friday a month. So staff and the board were coming in and doing this extra work and coming in on a Friday. So I was kind of trying to say thank you, because I get my Friday mornings back, so we were meeting from 9 to noon. So, and I'm in favor of it.
Is there any more discussion?
It's the 9 o'clock start time for the Measure D study sessions. For those of us who have work that is basically done usually in the mornings, it's a bit of a hardship, so I don't know whether... I mean, fortunately, you can work from almost anywhere now, but so I don't see getting a lot of support for that, but okay.
Yeah, what are you proposing now?
Maybe
Walter?
1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, or, you know, every once in a while. Doesn't have to be all the time.
I would prefer later in the day.
Yes, Ellen said she'd prefer 8.
No, it's
all right. Well, I'm open to either. So I can do morning, but not before 9, or afternoon. So whatever, I know that Mr. Millar's business, many of his clients are back east, so that he probably does have a conflict there with early morning things.
Fortunately, I'm semi-retired, so I'm willing to ugly through it, but every once in a while I might think about having...
Well, I'm not sure we're willing to deal with your ugliness, Mr. Millar. I would be willing to, on Thursdays, to move that to a later time. I'm not sure I want it in the afternoon, but I would consider that if it's the desire of the other board members.
If it was 10 to 1, would that be helpful to you?
Ellen.
Oh, I don't know. I will definitely go with the majority of the board. I will say I need to be done. I have a commitment every Thursday that begins at 5:30. So I have to just have a little downtime in between. It's nearby, but where I go, but I need to have a little downtime in between to make sure I'm prepared for my Thursday evening commitment.
I too would prefer, if we're going to meet Thursday afternoons, which I'd prefer not to meet in the morning. I need to be done by about 4 as well.
So then I'll propose that we schedule the board meetings or the Measure D study sessions then from 10 to 1.
Can I ask a question of Mrs. Holmes, maybe?
Sure.
Is the important thing about the calendar that we set the dates and then we can adjust the times later, or do you need the times and the dates right now?
The dates are more important. And now that I'm thinking about this, Thursday afternoon only improves the reason that we asked for this change a tiny little bit, because if you finish a study session at 4 o'clock... then I still only have, and you know, it doesn't happen a lot, but if something comes out of your study session that is going to come to you on the next Tuesday's agenda, we need time to prepare that information and get it into the packet, which I'm trying to publish Friday morning. But we can manage it. I mean, that's certainly better than having a study session on Friday morning and getting that material ready for you.
Madam President, if I could suggest that maybe we leave it as is and on an ad hoc basis, if there's a scheduling issue, that the board member can bring that forward as early as possible, obviously, and rather than change this just because a little old me. So.
Well, you originally suggested maybe starting at 10 rather than 9.
I was looking more at 1. But
yeah. But if you had a standing start at 10 o'clock, is that an improvement? And then still we could do some afternoons.
Jim's got commitments, too.
Okay. It's your call.
Well, Thursday is usually my most open day. So I'm just thinking that, let's set it up in a way that works for the majority of us.
Mrs. Holmes, I have a question about staff. So would that be a problem
yes,
if we work through lunch for staff? For presentation purposes?
Not necessarily on our timing. If we have longer meetings, I mean, if we know that you're going to be finished at 1 and then people can go to lunch when the study session concludes, I don't think that's a problem at all. If we have a more complicated study session, it takes longer, then we end up needing to arrange to feed everybody, and that is a little bit of a challenge.
Thank you. Mrs. Roger, did you...
No, I'm just motion? Used to having my microphone on.
Yes. Does anyone have a motion they would like to make? Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I think Marilyn put it out as a motion, didn't you, Marilyn, as 10-1, or just a suggestion? Okay, I'll make it a motion. We move the time on Thursdays from 10 until 1.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Unger. The rest of the calendar as is, Mrs. Holmes. The rest of the calendar is as is, correct? That is right. Yeah.
Yes, and I move the adoption of the calendar with that change on Thursdays. Time change.
So we have, again, a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 7-0.
Get that second cup of coffee. Yeah.
And now we move on to 6.04, appoint board members to committees and liaison posts. And this item is, again, Dr. Prater.
Yes. So every year we appoint board members, are appointed to represent subcommittees or committees, actually not subcommittees, committees, where they have an opportunity to represent important agencies. So, for example, the CC, the Central California Schools Financing Authority, which, we're meeting this week on Friday. This is the meeting where we meet, I believe, once a month, and it's a very quick meeting. And it's the oil revenue from Price Canyon Road. And it's very, right now we have Mr. Millar representing that committee. Then our next committee, we have the Slo County School Boards Association, which is currently represented by Jim Quisenberry. And this group, what makes this group so important is they act on matters that are of common concern, issues required by law, such as the County Committee on School District Reorganization. So that's a very important thing, especially as it in regard to the Cayucas Coast representation. And so that's currently with Jim Quisenberry. And then we have the interest-based bargaining liaisons representing CSEA and SEIU. We currently have Dr. Catherine Ozendrath-Rogers and Mrs. Marilyn Roger representing those two groups. And then we have Mr. Buckman representing the Tri-County Education Coalition. So altogether, we have five particular committee appointments that need to be done tonight. Madam Chair, it's yours.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I have an interest. let me see how I can state this diplomatically. I think someone should represent us on the school board association other than myself. My wife is going to be sitting on that committee, and I think it would be good to have. We want to avoid any taint of nepotism, conflict of interest there. And but I would be interested in one of the interest-based bargaining liaison positions if someone there is willing to relinquish their present spot. Only if they're willing to.
I am certainly willing to acquiesce to you, Mr. Quisenberry, so that you would be tremendous in that interest-based bargaining.
And that would be with CSEA.
I have a question about the School Boards Association. I may be interested in doing that because I'm not on any other committee. But I do have a standing Thursday night commitment. So when are those meetings generally? Do you know?
I hate to say they pull them out of the air, but they do seem. Kim.
They are just a few times a year, and I believe they're generally on a Monday evening.
Okay. Well, I'd be interested in doing that if you think I'm up to it after I can follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, they are rather large. Hey. But I do have small hands.
Not what I wanted to hear.
Can I? do you need a motion for these things? Yes.
We've handled these usually fairly simply. We're coming to a collegial agreement among the group.
Yes.
And so if we can just fill all these spots, then
I'll take one motion
to reflect all of those changes.
Okay.
I am willing, despite the tremendous workload of being on the Central California Schools Financing Authority, and I believe we meet quarterly. I would be pleased to continue that representation.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Thank you for volunteering, Mrs. Sheffer, for the county board. And Mark, what is your feeling about your position?
Yeah, this year I'm serving as the president of the Tri-County Education Coalition, so I'd like to
continue in that position.
Okay, and I have an interest in continuing as the board rep to SEIU unless someone else has a strong feeling that they would like to do that.
Well, that seems to work out swimmingly. Everybody is, Mrs. Sheffer, did you want to?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one clarification on the agenda item. It indicates that people serving on CSBA roles, that travel expenditures are paid by the district, and I just wanted to indicate that when I served on the annual education conference planning committee last year, that the district incurred absolutely no costs on my behalf. Everything was picked up by CSBA. So I just wanted to make that clarification.
And along those lines, for Tri-County Education, I pick up all my costs for that, and that those meetings are held in Goleta. And I too am going to go to to follow that practice with my CSBA delegate responsibilities.
Thank you, both of you, for serving in those capacities. Yes, Marilyn.
Well, I'm wondering, since the Tri-Counties Education Coalition is essentially a service to the board as our representative, I'm wondering if it's appropriate for Mr. Buckman to incur those costs himself.
I have to say, I really appreciate that thought. When I did take on that role at the board, I did commit to not putting any of the burden on the district. I'd like to continue that, especially in light of the cuts that we're going to be facing.
If that's your preference, then okay.
Yes, I appreciate that, though, Marilyn.
Madam Chair, if we could have a motion to handle all of those appointments in one swell swoop.
Okay, wonderful.
I move approval of the committee appointments as noted by Mrs. Holmes.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
7-0. we have a reorganization of our committees. Moving on to correspondence, there was none.
We did receive a letter from, I guess, no, Dr. Prater did. It was sent to Dr. Prater.
Okay. And public comment.
We have two requests to speak.
We have two requests to speak. The first would be Rabbi Linda Berthenthal, and the second is Kayla Plord. And so if you come on up, and then we have a three-minute time limit. So please state your name and go forward.
I'm Rabbi Linda Berthenthal, the rabbi of a small congregation here in SLO. I have only 50 kids in my school, so you can imagine how distressed I was that within 2 weeks after the election, four of my children had been the victims of anti-Semitic speech in their schools. This was spread through the county. The most severe incident, in my judgment, was here at SLO High. In the classroom, fellow students said in front of my student that all Jews should be killed. Now that followed some other pro-Nazi speech, Heil Hitler, Hitler was so smart, etc., which by itself is enough to make any Jewish person feel alarmed. But violent hate speech, I feel, should have zero tolerance in schools. The student was upset enough to tell her mother and afraid enough to ask her mother not to report it to the school. But her mother did report and was promised a prompt response. 2 weeks later, when she had heard nothing, she called back, and the response, she was like, "Who are you? What are you talking about?" So I urged her to make an appointment directly with the principal and agreed to go with her in support. She did get a meeting with the principal. He asked her not to bring me along. And in that meeting, he told her that he had counseled the students and the classroom teacher. He did not think the event was serious enough to warrant speaking to the parents of the students who engaged in the hate speech, nor to take any proactive steps to make the school climate more positive and less threatening. And I will note that after the counseling session with the students, they called the Jewish students a snitch, and her feeling of fear was only increased. So I'm here this evening to bring this to this board's attention, to ask you to consider somehow clarifying the language of Board Policy 5143, which states that the prohibited harassment includes conduct based on a protected category that is so severe or pervasive that it creates an intimidating, threatening, or hostile environment. I have to tell you that one single episode of true hate speech can indeed create a hostile and threatening environment. And this interpretation that this didn't rise to that level because it was only a single event just doesn't take into account the emotional impact of such violent hate speech. I also ask that you might consider amending Board Policy 5137 to mandate, rather than encouraging, school efforts to establish a positive school climate. This principal did not inform the concerned mother of any efforts, ongoing or in response to the incident, to teach students the meaning of equality and human dignity and mutual respect. I feel that speech has been lately degraded in our culture, and that we all have to work together to uplift those standards again for the sake of all of our students. My guess is that my particular students are a tip of an iceberg that that we all need to address together. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address you.
Thank you.
Rabbi Linda, thank you for coming, and I just want to point out to you that we actually cannot respond to you at this moment in time, but I do hope that you'll stay around for the rest of our board meeting, because we do have some revised policies that we're going to be discussing later that might be of interest to you.
Yeah, I'm in support of all the revisions that you that you're considering, but I don't think that they address the particular situation that I'm talking about, which is really, it has to do, I think, with the interpretation of the harassment policy. That's just not a good interpretation. Thank you so much.
I'm always intimidated by these for a minute. Kayla Plord, many of you know me with many hats. Tonight I am wearing the hat of a lay leader of the largest Jewish congregation in San Luis Obispo County.
Rabbi Linda's kids are my kids, too. Those are the kids in my tribe. And they're scared. And I really appreciate being able to address a board. I appreciate living in a country that calls out discrimination is not okay and that fairness to all is appropriate. San Luis Coastal has several policies that I think do a very good job of laying a very powerful road. Your bullying policy, your positive school climate policy, although I agree, Rabbi Linda, that it could be made a little bit stronger. I believe that the policy Rabbi Linda was referring to is your non-discrimination harassment policy, which is 5145.3. which calls for a safe environment, lists the categories against which you cannot discriminate, and it prohibits discrimination, harassment, intimidation, or bullying, which includes physical, verbal, and nonverbal or written conduct, and goes on. All Jews should be killed. To me, that goes a little bit beyond hate speech and goes to a threat. And that steps even beyond your policies into education code 48900.3, which speaks to hate violence. So we have a good road. We have laws. We have board policies. So what's left to the school district to do is put the rubber on the road. And in my opinion, you could do a better job at enforcing some of those policies and making them hit home. The fact that a child could say to another child, I wish that all of your people could be killed, and the parents didn't even hear that, I'm appalled. I ask you to step up where the rubber hits the road.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board on any matter, either before the board this evening or not otherwise in front of the board? Okay. I'm not seeing anyone.
Thank you. So we're moving on to the business and budget update, and that would be Mr. Ryan Pinkerton.
Yeah, I'm just going to give a really quick update to the board in terms of the fire damage that happened down at San Luis Obispo High School. So currently, we met with the insurance company last Friday, so the adjuster was here. I believe Mr. Plaza is going to be re-meeting or talking to them again on Thursday. Rick Stimson has got some bids in terms of getting a cleanup crew in there, kind of a demolition crew to come through and really gut the three main classrooms. One was Mrs. Fecho's room, but there was also Mrs. Bogus, as well as a Spanish classroom that was really, you know, impacted by the fire. Mr. Brewington's classroom as well, a lot of smoke damage. So in our conversations today, it was kind of take the one wall in Mr. Brewington's rooms, kind of see what it's like. We've discussed taking all the wood out of the room. So that classroom will be one that we'll be watching, I would say, over the next couple of days. As we, you know, once we clear out the other three rooms, we'll see, you know, if the smoke is still there, if it's still bad. At that point, we'll have to, you know, if it is still bad, we're going to have to look at a permanent, I think, solution until we're able, through Measure D, to renovate all four of those classrooms. So that's something we'll be working with the site on. I sent Mr. O'Connor an email today in that regard. So I just wanted to also just give kudos to the crew. So BG&T, from 1 o'clock that night when we heard about it to that next day, getting those classrooms emptied, getting those personal effects over to the BG&T ER, really did a good job. And it was tough. It was tough to be in those rooms. I mean, the smoke inhalation, the being on the roof, it was rainy, it was, you know, all those things. So, again, I just kudos to the BG&T department, to the maintenance staff, everybody who kind of stepped up to kind of deal with that situation. And Mr. Simpson, Mr. Plasso, and his crew have really done a great job. So, we, again, working with insurance, we'll take care of all of those things. We will try to get those teachers kind of up and coming in terms of get them, you know, going, getting things moved, getting their materials ready to go. So, of course, that, you know, takes a little bit of time. Fortunately, we have some temp classrooms coming that were already kind of in the plans. So we're going to try to speed those up and have those in place in January when the teachers come back or soon thereafter. So our hope is to try to alleviate this as much as possible. Mr. Moore.
I just wanted to add my thanks to Mr. Palazzo for an excellent report on the fire damage and the state of the building and the Friday Focus. It was very well done. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Educational Services update.
Yeah, due to the length of this meeting, and we have some people that are here to present tonight, I think I'll pass on my educational section tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Prater. Next, we have Measure D update.
I'm going to be going in depth into the design build process tonight, so we'll hold off on the Measure D because that's mainly what we've been working on.
Excellent. Thank you. Under resolutions, this is resolution number 071617. It's our first interim report of 10/31/16. Hello, Ms. Lang.
See, do I know how to do this? Are you good?
Good evening.
Thank you. I don't get this figured out yet. I'm not used to having control. So, tonight we are presenting our first interim report, which is our financial report between when we adopted the budget last June and as of October 31st at a point in time. And I will go through, as I said, we have a full meeting tonight, so I will go through briefly the changes that have occurred to the budget and why they occurred, and open it up to questions, and then Ryan will go over the 7-year projection. So you can see that our revenues increased, which is normal. Our property taxes went up by almost $500,000. It was about 0.7% more than we had budgeted, and about 3.57% more than we received last year. So that was good news. Federal revenues always go up because we budget our carryovers. Our state revenues are due to some increases in some of our grants, CTE grant. We got the college readiness grant, so that's in there. And then there's also some carryover amounts in there. And then, of course, our local revenues always go up because we have billing accounts that we receive money for, and we receive other monies in other local revenues that we don't budget for originally. We also have our transfer in from 20, didn't change. We budgeted $1 million in to cover our retiree benefits, and that didn't change at first interim. If you recall, we made agreements with our classified employee groups last June, but it wasn't in time to get into budget. So all three employee groups had the 1% raise in there. So that's the majority of the salary increases is the 1% raises. And then benefits, of course, go up when salaries go up. Books and supplies is mostly carryover. We had about $850,000 in restricted ending balances that got budgeted, and about another $600,000 in general fund carryover that got budgeted. And most of that ends up in books and supplies, so that's why we have that increase there. And some of that also goes into services and operations, as well as there's some increases due to different consultant agreements. Almost all of the billing account revenue that we get gets budgeted also in the 5,000 accounts for assemblies and field trips, things like that. So that always increases. As you see the local revenues go up, you're going to see the services and operations go up as well. And then capital outlay, this one is the easiest to explain because these are big chunks of money. We have $310,000 of that is for the new phone system. It's the district portion that we can't charge to Measure D. So that's in the general fund. We also had a new bus in there, vehicle replacements, new furniture, and some CTE equipment. And let's see, I'm forgetting anything. And some maintenance equipment. That increased that from $10,000 to $971,000.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So, Julie and I talked a little bit today, and mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. When I saw the capital outlay, I was interested in the fact that we as a board adopted a budget with a $10,000 amount and then it jumped up to almost $1 million in spending. And so Julie explained to me that, help me if I get this wrong, Julie explained that the $10,000, or maybe it's best for you to explain it, the $10,000 is a placeholder?
We don't always budget equipment when we do the budget adoption. Mm-hmm. We kind of wait to see how we actually end the year at unaudited actuals and see what kind of ending balance we're going to have before we budget our equipment. And then we also have things that just come up, like the phone system, mm-hmm. that we didn't know about when we did budget adoption.
Right.
Remember that really the first time we brought budget adoption to you was in May, so there were a lot of unknowns at that time. So as we get to know what needs we're going to have, then we put those in the budget.
And so our conversation kind of went to some of the needs were known, and then we've had some past history with capital outlay. And so my question was, as a board member, when I'm approving the budget, which is one of the fiscal responsibilities, a big one for us, is there something that we could do to either project what the capital outlay is or to look at an average over the past 5 years or something, so we're not getting into the year and then the phone system comes up and we really haven't had a chance to prioritize. It just comes forward as an item in the budget, in the board meeting.
That's kind of why the 7-year budget, I would say, is kind of critical, because it does show that projection of kind of where we're at, what we're looking at. We do kind of wait until unaudited actuals, like Julie said, to kind of before we move forward with things. So that said, throughout the year, the board is every meeting approving, in this case, the phone system, those types of things. So we could, in the initial budget, make that a higher dollar figure, even though we don't necessarily know what it's going to be at that time. But first interim is kind of a snapshot of this time period. What we know is that it changes, right? So from first interim to second interim to, you know, our final budget documents, unaudited actuals, it changes every time. We're not going to spend $5.6 million in materials and supplies. We never do. So that's why that 7-year budget kind of lays out what the reality of kind of where we think we're going to end the year at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think hopefully for the board that kind of gives you that projection guidance aspect of it, of where we feel like we'll end. Otherwise, whenever we have every big purchase, we would have to come back with kind of, hey, here's where we're at with capital outlay, or maybe that's the one category we could look at, but... We can do a better job of doing that early.
Yeah, or just
earlier.
Yeah, or when it's
cycle.
In the. Yeah, that would be great. Mm-hmm. When it's in the consent agenda under purchases, like for me, it would be good to know that was not. It's a new item, as opposed to we just went out and spent some money that the board had approved, and we're spending it, and it's showing up in okay. there, but it's not something that we've necessarily seen in the budget.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm sure there's something we can do, mm-hmm. but it just caught my attention.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman.
Thank you.
Okay, so we also, let's see, where did I leave off here? Okay, equipment. We had we received some money in other local revenue for the workers' comp rebate. We decided that we're going to put that into Fund 40 to help fund. Capital outlay projects that aren't part of Measure D that we're going to need to fund for the future. I won't go through all of these, but these are all the changes to the ending balance. You can see the property tax revenue was one thing, the new phone system is up there, new bus, vehicle replacement, furniture. We had to increase some contracts. We have the 1% salary increase. So bottom line, the total change to the ending balance decreased by $2,702,000. And then just to kind of keep you up to date on where we are with our LCFF funding, you can see that we're the blue line up there. And we got some clarification on how this is all going to work and really what they're basing our LCFF revenue on. Isn't just the LCFF calculation. It also includes the minimum state aid, which is the old categorical funding, and takes out the amount that we transfer to Bellevue Santa Fe. So you can see that blue line is still quite a bit over the LCFF target. Now, the gap funding is getting very close to the LCFF target, and once it reaches that target, they'll just get COLA funding after that, which will probably be around 2%. So we expect to stay pretty far above that LCFF rate for a little while at least. And that's all I have. Do you have any questions before I turn it over to Ryan? Thank you, Ms. Lane.
Will you pull up the 7-year budget for me? So I think I have a better... So I would say, for Mr. Bruckman's sake, for that, we can, at that beginning of the year in May, lay some things out. It's just been the practice that we've kind of waited until the fall to kind of see. In terms of, if you look at the 7-year budget, some key things, and we're actually revising this. So working with school services right now to kind of lay out what this is going to look like. Working with Julie, we've added a few different factors, and it's hard to read because it's the number of years that are there. But a couple of things that we've added in terms of 7-year budget, we added the $2 million from PG&E. We put back in the Prop 30, the Prop 51 dollars into revenues. The huge change from last year to this year in terms of state revenues that you might have seen, the drop in 29%, and that's mainly because we got a ton of one-time monies last year. So the one-time monies over the past 3 or 4 years, as the state economy has been really good, has really helped us through these difficult times. And what I would say is that kind of leveled off. We did get some one-time funds this year, some educator effectiveness funds, as well as a little bit more in terms of one-time. All indications are that the way the state economy is going, that one-time funds are going to end. We'll know for sure when the governor comes forward here in January and kind of presents a budget where we're at in terms of, are we going to receive more of those? So, if you go down, Kim, to the very bottom of revenues, you'll see in 15-16, our total revenues was $90 million. It actually dropped, even with that increase, to $89 million for this year in terms of our overall revenues. So we did have the property tax. We did factor in some depreciation for Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. This does not reflect any of the budget changes that we're talking about with Dr. Prater presenting in February in terms of looking at reductions. And so, Kim, if you'll go down to the expenditures page, kind of some key areas for the board to look at. So just stop there for a minute. So if go down a little bit, Kim, because we lost the heading of the years. No, sorry, go up. Sorry. So 15-16, you'll look at in terms of certificated salary. So we have put the 111 into these now. So those have been in for the teachers, for the classified, both SEIU and CSEA. But really the key is look at that STIRS and PERS. So those changes from 15-16 to 16-17, and then look at what we're faced with 17-18. So on top of the Diablo Canyon loss in revenue, again, and this is something the board has known. We've had this projection. We've known that the deficits were there. It's coming type of thing. And you kind of take it year by year as we go. But those are things that are becoming really starting to lay out and be part of. So fortunately for us, our property taxes were high this year again. So, a little bit over 5%. But with the depreciation of Diablo, it brought it back down to in the low 3 range. So we were fortunate in that kind of absorbed that, but we still had our STIRS and PERS hit as well as our health care benefits. And so you can see that has increased dramatically again from last year, even going into 17-18 in terms of our projections outgoing. So this is something we're kind of dialing in both with school services. Julie and I are going to be continuing to work on this. Now that we kind of know what the PG&E settlement is, we're going to try to get rid of the previous years, expand this out to the 2025, the PG&E Diablo, to kind of have that running, where we're at, what it looks like. So if you go all the way down, Kim, in terms of looking at those things. And so, again, this projection shows those capital outlay purchases that we talked about that weren't necessarily in the original budget but are in this projection. So in terms of this year, looking at our projection, is that we have about $1 million deficit this year. We're not getting any of the PG&E money this particular year. So even though we were above, we had about a $1.6 million surplus last year, it's about $1 million deficit based on our expenditures and our revenues. So different than what you see in First Interim. Because, again, we had a lot of, in first interim, we take all of the CTE money, we take all of our other funds that we received, and we put those, and we say that we're going to expend them all, which we don't. So those actually get expended out over the next few years in terms of it doesn't all happen at one time. So that is a deficit in terms of this year that we're working on. And so that's kind of, at this point in the year, that's kind of our projection for this particular school year. So you can imagine the reason why, Dr. Prater, in terms of when we look at bringing to the board a budget reduction plan starting next year, to start to look at that, current $2.8 million deficit that we need to deal with on now going, on an ongoing basis. So as we go through the year, we update this with our numbers as we know them, kind of make sure that, we stay on track. But that's, with all of this, we still meet our 10% reserve. We still set aside all of our set-asides. And we actually had $400,000 unappropriated. So even with the deficit that you see, we're still able to do all those things that the board, wants us to have in place. And at the same time, we're doing a lot of work around our district. So we're doing a lot of things in terms of new buses, new vehicle replacement, things that in the long run are going to save us money. And so though they may cost at this point in terms of setting those up, but in new furniture, new they just finished all of the new meters because we had some of the water meters at some of our sites in terms of looking at our lawns and our grasses and those types of things. So all of these things are investments that I think will down the road help us in our overall budget. So this is kind of our snapshot today in terms of first interim.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. That certainly gives clarity to this issue. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this? Seeing no one. Mark, you're Mr. Buckman?
I thought Jim was... I just wanted to say thank you. The report, I can remember the first time I came to the board meeting and did first interim, and I couldn't understand it at all. And so I just want to thank Julie and you for making this just get easier and easier to understand. The other part of this for me, and it's just a few lines in here, and it's on 8.6 of the summary, and it's the local control accountability progress, and it's just so nice because it's just this blending of the budget stuff and student services and what we're doing for kids, and it's not a big part of your presentation, but it's really nice to see that kind of approach in the budgeting process.
And kudos to Amy and Kim and Diane and Julie for
it's just great.
That together.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mr. Pinkerton, in November, the voters passed a bond for state bond for modernization.
Yes.
Of which I think we project we might receive as much as $15 million?
15 to 20.
15 to 20, okay. Would those funds then go into Fund 20, or where?
Facility Fund, probably. Fund 40.
I think it's usually a separate Fund 35. I'm not positive, but
so they'll have their own?
They'll have their own fund.
Fund?
Yes.
And accountability for that, then? I imagine we have some accountability with the state for how we spend those funds.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And a lot of reporting, I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you. And then on the, I'm just wondering about the vehicle replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we've replaced a number of our buses over the last 5 years, let's say.
So along with the bus that's actually on the agenda tonight for approval for the board, we had another free bus that is coming as well. So these are actually two kind of field trip buses. So they can be used for everyday routes, but they're basically a little nicer in terms of the seats, the setup. They have Wi-Fi plug-in. So our goal is that a lot of our like athletic competitions, where now they're spending thousands of dollars for charters, that these would then become replacement. The teams, kids would use those. In terms of a huge savings for us in the future, not chartering out our trip. So that's kind of the purpose of why that extra...
But they're full-size buses.
Absolutely.
So I think that Mrs. Sharp has been able to secure four or five buses
at least
for us. And I don't know how many buses we have in our fleet. At what point will we have achieved total replacement?
I could Friday report that for you. I can talk to Mr. Sharp and let you know.
We might be getting kind of close to... Oh, we have a lot?
We have a lot of buses.
Okay. And vehicle replacements, I know that we've done some.
So, yeah, so this is... We have done some, a few trucks, one replacement car for the IS&T group. So this is another replacement kind of economical car for them. So they've been driving those, like,
the
mid-80 Tauruses. So they're past their prime in terms of doing that. Unfortunately, what the board is seeing, too, is we're having to catch up on a lot of things that, unfortunately, we didn't do necessarily a replacement plan in the past.
I get it. I know we didn't do it for a long time.
So this is – it's kind of the cost of that. So but there's also – and I believe there's two trucks to replace the maintenance fleet. So those, you know, basically get handed down, and then our oldest trucks – go away. So
are we getting close to having achieved full replacement?
We just started. But I can break it down for you. I'll let you know kind of where we're at, what the new placement.
Yeah, I'd love to know because we don't...
Annie has a list of all of the cars.
I realize that we did not replace those Ford Tauruses. They are mid-80s or even older.
Yeah.
We certainly got our use out of them, but we don't anticipate being on a vehicle replacement, you know, a sinking fund for an every 5-year replacement cycle or whatever. We drive our vehicles longer than that.
Oh, yeah. Long time.
Okay.
Very long time.
And thank you for inventing a new verb, Friday report that. That's new to me.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to Dr.
Eisendrath.
Thank you.
My light has been on. I would like to. It's my understanding that we have a resolution to adopt as part of this. Is this correct?
Yes.
And if there's no further comment, I'd like to make a motion to adopt the first interim report as of 10/31/16.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye. Resolutions are roll call.
It's a roll call.
No.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Sheffer?
Yeah. Mr. Millar, the resolution takes that action to approve the first interim report. So Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
And Mr. Millar? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm next up on in terms of looking at our design, authorizing a resolution to move into design build. So there's kind of two approvals for the board tonight. The first one is just for us to enter into a design build contract. We have to actually do a resolution as a board. So the kind of one of the purposes in the design build kind of legalese is that the board has to say that this is the best value for the board in terms of moving forward. So I have a kind of a whole rundown in terms of design build, why we chose design build, the selection process, those types of things. I can do that now as part of this resolution, or I can do it with the contract documents. So it's kind of up to the board in terms of how you would like me to proceed with that.
Maybe you could perhaps do that with the contract documents.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so we will...
And I'll go through the RFQ, RFP process and, you know, kind of lay it out how we got to that selection, those types of things for the actual contract. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
So we do need to pass a resolution for the board. Needs to pass a resolution, which lays out the fact that the board is approving moving into.
I'll make
on
the
this
motion.
Particular motion.
Do we have? We should go to the public first.
Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there anyone who would like to? Oh, Marilyn, hi.
Hi. I'll move resolution 10/16/17. No.
9/16.
How about 9/16/17, Measure D to authorize and enter design build contracts with Acme Construction Company, Inc., as presented?
Is there a second?
Just with a comment, is this the same company that supplies Wile E. Coyote?
It does not.
That was just a comment. I will second the resolution.
You know what I was thinking the same thing.
It had to be asked. We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. It's a roll call vote.
I have a question.
Oh, and further discussion by Mr.
Yeah, this is not just a resolution to enter into design build. This is a resolution to award contract to Acme Construction. So why are we postponing delivering the information about why we selected them?
I'll go through it.
Okay.
That's okay.
If that's all right with the rest of the board, it seems kind of...
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds fine. So the board study, we started way back, over a year ago, in terms of looking at delivery models. So the design bid build at the time, lease back, we looked at design build. We looked at construction administration, all kinds of different things. And through that point, lease back had a lot of issues with it because of the Davis case. And the board kind of moved to have half of our projects done under the design bid build route, and then the other half under this design build. There's good and bad in each, right? In terms of looking at design bid build, it opens it up to any contractor that's out there. You're supposedly going to get the lowest price at that point, as long as you get firms to bid. We've kind of found out in some different incidents. And with design build, again, you kind of get to have your team. You bring the contractor in early along with the architect. You work side by side. So a lot of the change order issues that maybe happen with design bid build, you can work out prior to having DSA designs and those sorts. What we did and through design build, through the law, and it's what they've done now to make lease back legal, is they've added the competition piece. They've added the price piece to the design build selection process. And so that's what we did. We worked with our attorneys from DWK, and we put together a process. So there was an RFQ first, a request for qualifications, put that out to firms. Hey, are you qualified to be a design build team and work with the district? So design build team would be both the contractor, the construction firm, as well as the architect. So they team up in this process. And the reason why we did that is basically you lock that contractor in. So for us, with a lot of work, with a lot of, millions and millions of dollars going to be coming into this county in terms of work, we're now able to lock in a firm and an architect to get all of those projects done, $70 million, $80 million worth of work can get accomplished through that. So as part of the design build process, too, you start by doing bridging docs. So we hired another firm because it can't be the same architect, so Pratt Architects. We actually did an RFQ for that as well. Came forward, and they produced our bridging documents, which kind of brings all of our both sites, Morro Bay High, Slo High, up to a schematic design phase. And so those designs went out to estimators, so to Saylor estimators, and we came back, and those estimates that we received from the bridging docs, which give us a much clearer picture, right? I mean, it's not perfect in terms of knowing what the cost is going to be, but it was a lot better than when we first started and we kind of just had our grand master plan. We actually had designs, went to an estimated firm and kind of set those. So those helped us establish the not to exceed or the contract prices that got put forward in the RFP, which is the request for proposals or price. And so the design build firm will, again, work directly with the school district and setting up, kind of taking those plans and moving forward. So we actually had five firms that put in a request for our RFQ, for the request for qualifications. Out of those five, only one didn't make it. And the reason for that, we had a whole scoring matrix for it that was set up, again, worked with our attorneys to lay out. And the key reason was an experience factor. So though the individual entities in the group had been involved in school construction and been involved in while, they had not worked together as one firm. So because of that, they were taken out of qualifications. But the other four design build teams moved forward. And so they moved forward to our RFP. So working with our attorneys, there are some key things that the language basically has, or the Ed Code has, in terms of design build. And so we use those as we kind of put together a scoring matrix for in terms of tying in and how we were going to have the actual selection process. So those four firms were called. We sent out kind of the RFP, which was an updated version of what we were going to do at both schools. So it was really a request for both Morro Bay High and a request for San Luis Obispo High, separated. Though we said we could offer both of those contracts to one firm if the interview panel deemed that was something that we felt was in the best interest of the district. So we left that out there to them. So they put together packets of basically kind of six different areas. One was just kind of information about the design build team, which included the members of the team, the subcontractors, who their mechanical, electrical, plumbing subs are. So kind of who is this design build team, the architect, all those types of things. The second, which was a really key part, was the price proposal. So one of the key things with design build is we get to set those numbers at the very beginning. We're not, dictating each project what it's going to be. So price was set in terms of profit, general conditions. So what it takes to set up, the kind of general cost of running the contractor on the site, as well as the design cost. So those are all things that get established in this. And that was one of the requests in the RFP. They had to tell us how much they were going to charge us and what that percentage profit was going to be. The third thing was kind of technical expertise in terms of what's their schedule look like, their resume in terms of what work they've done before, their organizational chart. So a lot more, kind of general information, detailed information about this design build firm, both the firm itself as well as the architect and design team. As part of the law, you have to talk about life cycle costs. So as they're going through construction, as they're building, what are the life cycle things that tie into their construction, and how do they deal with that in making plans and designing and actually construction? So that's actually, you have to have that as one of the factors. Safety record was another one in terms of what is their workman's comp aspect and injuries on site, those types of things. There's actually a factor that they have that they had to share. And then the last one was their claims, litigation, and termination history. Had they had issues before with other groups. So we had an interview panel of five people. It was myself. It was Rick Stimson. It was Steve Stewart, so our director of facilities maintenance, our Measure D. Director Karen Campbell-Bright, our purchasing agent, was there, as well as Mr. Holcomb, the advisor to the district. So went through the interviews. I'm going to, Kim, if you'll pull up the page that has kind of the breakdown of costs. I think it's one of the attachments. Actually, stop there for a second. So if you go up a little bit, Kim, before we pull that up. So we go through an interview process. Each one of us interview the groups. Each one of those gets points. Price was a key factor. It's 35 points if you're the best price, 30 points if you're not. And so what I would tell you is all four of the groups could all do our work in some form or fashion. Would I award all four of the design build teams maybe both projects? Nah, there was a couple that could definitely do one project in terms of I would award them San Luis Obispo High School or Morro Bay High School. And then there were two firms that were kind of bigger firms that we felt like could handle the work. But all of them really scored well in all of those out of the categories. So it really came down to, I think, best value aspect. A big part of it was also price. So you can see the scores in terms of, so those are the actual scores that the different companies were given by the five of us and then tabulated. So that's all done. Each individual person tabulates their own, gives it to us. We did a combined score. So if you go ahead and attach the actual price, Kim. Yep. So this was the actual price comparison. So you'll see the different companies in terms of their total costs. So and again, this is not what it's going to cost. That's these factors based on those NTE amounts per school site. So in terms of the again, Morro Bay High, it was $32 million in terms of, that was the estimate for the work of the design build work after that Saylor estimate was about $32 million. It was $38 million at slow high. So then you get the contractor fee, general conditions, design cost. You get an amount that basically would be kind of their designed team what they would be paid. So you'll see there's a significant difference between the Acme firm down to Vernon Edwards, down to Wysong, as well as Bernard. So Acme by far was the lower of the four groups that went through an RFP proposal. They were also the unanimous choice of all five of us on the interview team after it was said and done. And the firm itself, though, Acme is an out of the area place. You know, they're MEP subs, we're all local people, they tied in local contractors, so there's still a lot of local groups that were tied to that. One of the factors, and a couple of them too, is in terms of general conditions, they give you a number of months that they tell you, you know, this is how long we think it's going to be in terms of the overall. And so there were a couple of firms that, though their general conditions were much higher, they basically had the same, or it wasn't as much in terms of the amount of time. So they didn't give it enough time in terms, so it'd be actually more if the project ran longer than that. So based on all of those factors, again, all five of us in the group, the history of the group, their resume, you know, the individuals that were there that we spoke with, it was, again, clear to all five of us that we felt that Acme with their team, with their design team, was the best choice. And so price also played a key factor in that. And you can kind of see by looking at the chart, how that the effect of it. So in terms of design build, what happens as well is that now, and if it's okay, so that kind of, that's the selection, that's why Acme was selected. I think with the contract part of it, I'll kind of lay out a little bit how design build works, if that's okay.
Yes.
I have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. That was a very good idea. That was helpful. Thank you, Mr.
Yes.
Pinkerton.
So who is the architect for Acme?
So Gary is his name, and it's DLR is the firm.
Okay. So I was under the impression that for design build, the architect and the contractor would form a design build entity, and
yes,
they would be ultimately responsible to the district for the completion of the work.
True.
So why are we entering a contract just with Acme Construction, or proposing to enter into?
Well, because their DLR is tied to that firm. So they have their own agreement together to work together.
Okay.
Mr. Holkin may be able to answer that.
They didn't actually form a separate entity. They just have a contractual arrangement where the architectural
yes.
firm works for the contractor.
Yes.
Okay. It's a little different than how I understood it. Notwithstanding my reclusive lifestyle, I have heard a ton. And a couple of things kind of bothered me. First of all, we were awarding two major design build to the same company out of the area that, to my knowledge, we don't really have any direct experience with. Their pricing strikes me as maybe a little hopeful. How can you account for them being so much less than the other bidders? Or can you? Does it give you pause that their estimates could be off and we'd be stuck with this firm doing both of our major projects?
Yeah. I mean, based on their team of people that they put together, it doesn't give me as much cause in terms of looking at the overall price and what they put forward. So is it lower than the other groups? Maybe because they're an outside firm, that's what they're normally, you know, those are the profit margins that they charge where they're from in terms of looking at that versus what we were kind of seeing. And we've seen a wide variation, even with the other firms, in terms of some of the design bid build work we put out and the variances of even those other firms that we currently have from both contractors as well as architects. So it can vary between from the lower to the higher, I would say, as we've done our projects, as we put things out there.
And as far as the availability of local subcontractors, mm-hmm. I guess, essentially, You indicate that one of the advantages for ACME is that they have relationships with local subcontractors.
So they're MEP, basically. So they're a mechanical, electrical, plumber, which are the kind of the key sub, you know, the key subs that they'll use throughout, are definitely tied to a lot of our local areas. So that included Mano Construction, Toma Electric, RM Design Group. There's several others in terms of local.
So was ACME able to have a contractual relationship with Toma? And that was the other one you just mentioned, the one I
yes.
blank out.
Yes.
So that precluded other contract or deep design build entities from accessing that labor?
No, they could have as well. I mean, some of the, you'll see, like PMSM was with both Vernon Edwards as well as Vernon Edwards as well as Jim Weissong Construction. So they could have signed up with any of the players and had different relationships with them. It didn't preclude anybody from doing that.
So,
and they might have chosen not to.
So basically, ACME had the same right to try to hire subcontractors here locally as the other bidders had.
Absolutely.
Okay. There was no special contractual arrangement with those, with Toma or Mano.
Not. I don't know if I.
Was there a contractual relationship between ACME Construction and Mano or Toma, to the extent that they were guaranteed their services that may have disadvantaged other bidders?
You know, I don't.
Well, there.
Mike.
Go ahead.
All of the major mechanical, electrical, plumbing contractors had to be pre-qualified as part of the process. But remember that the subcontractors can choose who they want to work for also. So it could be that they chose, you know, you could have a subcontractor who chooses one general and doesn't choose the others.
Okay.
It doesn't have to bid to them, but there was no contract per se in existence prior to.
So it may have been a situation where Toma and Mano felt better about aligning themselves with ACME or one of the other.
Well, there's
entities.
A lot of experience modification and bonding ability, and yeah, there's a lot to it. So I assume they made prudent financial decisions, the subcontractors.
Okay. And then I just have to ask this question, just so it's out in public. Does any does any of the scoring parties have now, or have they had a working relationship or a business relationship with ACME Construction?
I would say that you mean as like any kind of business relationship contractually or anything like
that? Or have worked with them before?
Well, I just want to know if there's a relationship so that I can assess whether or not the scoring was unaffected by the relationship, if there was one. So
I would say that, so everybody in the panel knows, so we've all worked with Toma. We've all worked with RRM.
I don't mean worked with,
the MEP.
I mean worked for or had a business.
Oh, no, no, not worked for, no.
Okay, good.
No, yeah, nobody's worked for.
Them.
So we've worked with those. I think
sure.
We've worked with all of them.
I'm looking for bias.
Yes, I get
it.
Okay.
For. Okay. And sometimes when you work with a company like that,
you can
be being biased.
It could be good or bad bias.
Good or bad. That's exactly right. Okay, I'll yield.
So we have a motion on the floor, ma'am.
Is there anyone in the public?
We already went to the public. Did we not already go to the public?
Not on this particular item. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one?
So we have a motion and a second. Do we not have a motion and a second?
Yeah, with Mrs. Roger and Mr. Questenberry. So I will take the roll.
Is there some further discussion?
Mrs. Roger.
Further discussion?
Yes. Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Okay.
Item number 9.04. Mr. Pinkerton?
Oh, yes. So this has to do with our San Luis Obispo fire as well. So as part of the CUPCA rules and kind of ed code, we can... Yes. So CUPCA is the... Thank you. I just know it is CUPCA. So it's basically the rules that govern bidding for us as a district. So with everything going on with in terms of slow high, and some of that's going to need to be done expediently in terms of bidding. Now, again, we met with the insurance agent last Friday. We're doing everything that insurance asks us to do, bids, those types of things. But there are certain rules, like you have to informally bid everything up to, on your CUPCA list, up to $175,000, $187,000. So what if the bid came back at $189,000? Would we stop? Would we go back? Would we formally bid everything? Or because this is an emergency situation, we need to get those rooms cleaned, we're going to go ahead and offer the $189,000. So that's what this board resolution does, is it provides us a little bit of flexibility. We're still getting bids. We're still going through all that process. It would just give us, just in case something like that were to occur, that there is some bidding issues, we actually have to bring this back to the board every single time we have a meeting up until we're done with this resolution. So we have to keep the board notified about whether we're continuing to use this or not. I don't see us really using it, except for maybe the next week or two, in terms of getting that cleanup done, getting the things that we need to get accomplished to get that site cleaned up. So I'm asking the board to pass the resolution. Again, our attorneys at DWK put this together for us, looked it over, and so it's something that will help us just in case to ensure that we get that work done.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this emergency resolution entering into contracts for services related to the repairs and replacement of our facilities caused by the fire? Mr. Quisenberry.
I'll move approval of resolution number 10-16-17.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
I will have Anthony continue to update the board as he has in the past.
Thank you. We are at the action discussion portion of the agenda. And this is with Mr. Pinkerton and regarding.
Yeah, so I'm going to have Ty and Mike come up and talk to the board a little bit about asking the board to approve some easement adjustments to our Avila property and what a road. You've been at the Avila property a lot longer than I have, but if you have been out there recently, there is a little bit of progress, right? So they have, five units that are there. They're kind of moving forward with the other side, and it does look like that schoolhouse is headed to be renovated. So without any other questions, Kim, if you could pull up the master plan picture, I'll have them take you through it.
Hello, I'll take you through the general concept of the easements. I'll have Mike explain where they are, although I did go out this afternoon and walk the actual easements to make sure they didn't have any negative impact that we didn't see on paper. But what these are individual lots that we created. The property was subdivided, so each of these buildings is on a separate lot. And so what that did was create issues when there's parking that goes with one building and the parking is on another lot. You need to create an easement for that lot, the parking. And there's also an access road that Mike can walk you, but it kind of goes around behind building. I'm not sure where it goes around building. I can't even see. I need new glasses. B, and goes back up to building C, I believe is what it is. And so that's kind of the concept we're doing. It isn't. There wasn't anything that I found out negative about these. This is on a ground lease, so we're not going to have anything to do with it for another 90 years. And I just made sure that they didn't rope us into anything we didn't want to be in. So I'll let Mike explain exactly what these are.
Hello, I'm Mike Hodge. I'm one of the members of Sheer Edge Development, Avila, LLC. And so there's really two types of easements here. One runs from top to bottom on the page next to the school from here up there. It's 10 feet wide. This easement was actually discussed right at the very beginning when we did this project back with Russell Miller and Brad Parker. The reason that we never got to this point until now is because we ended up phasing the project and the easement wasn't necessary at that time, because the first phase was building D, And then the second phase was building C and B, and now we're getting close to starting building A, and that's the last phase of track 2667. And then hopefully we can move forward with the rehabilitation of the schoolhouse. But tonight, there's the one easement that is pretty...
I'm going to have Kim actually pull the easement page up.
Yeah, okay. This is a an excerpt from our final map that you're going to see. That drawing shows the one easement that Ty mentioned, which is really just an access easement to get from San Antonio Street back to Building C on lots 3 and 4. There's the map. Yes. You can rotate that clockwise. Oh, okay. Oh, there we go. So that 10-foot wide easement that I was describing is on the far right, right here. And that's on parcel 2, which is the schoolhouse parcel. It actually is needed. It benefits track 2667 so that all the parking fits. And this is something, like I mentioned, that was discussed quite a while ago. We knew this easement was coming. And then the other one is strictly an access easement that just goes up here and goes back to lots 3 and 4. So we're cleaning up an access easement that we originally showed on lot 2 to get back. So at some point, we're going to relinquish the easement on lot 2 and replace it with this one. Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah, and then there's, we got a little more specific on the legal description, and it's in that document that Kim was scrolling through that is the parking easements right there for lots 3 and 4. Two stalls are in a garage, and then two stalls tandem are out on the driveway. Any questions regarding that?
This is an action discussion item, so Ms. Marilyn, do you have a question?
Well, I don't really have any questions. Do you plan to take this to the public?
Yes, if
okay,
yes.
Then I'll wait. And
okay. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this matter? The Avila School property. Okay. Marilyn.
Okay, well, I'm delighted that things are moving forward on this project. Mrs. Sheffer and I were on the superintendent's advisory committee when we first began to discuss revenue generation from the Avila schoolhouse property. That was, I believe, 16 years ago. So this, when people express a little bit of frustration with the rapidity of the movement on this project, I think, you know, it's been in the pipeline for a long time, and I'm sure you share the same frustrations that we have with, you know, seeing it come to fruition. I'll move approval of the Avila School property easements as presented.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That passes 7-0.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're moving on now to the CTE update. Hello.
Good evening. I'm here tonight with Liz Moore, and Liz has been serving as the work-based learning coordinator with the SLOPE grant, so with the countywide consortium, as well as helping us district-wide with career technical education. And here's the clicker here. Great.
Great. So tonight we're going to just kind of review district-specific information related to career technical education. I know many of you got an update on overall on career technical education when you were at the School Board Association conference. So this will be just some specific information about our district. So we will look at some of the industry sectors, pathways, and courses that we're working on within our district. Some of those courses we're working towards A to G approval and also creating dual enrollment agreements. We've had a lot of great support and interest from business and industry, beginning to look at those connections, look at how we're marketing those pathways, and how we're looking at braiding our funding in order to try to ensure equity across all the pathways. So I will hand it over to Liz.
Okay, I'm happy to be here to talk about CTE. There's a lot of things happening. This particular graphic shows the work that we've done in creating the pathways and the course sequences. So this is for Morro Bay High. We have pathways in agriculture, media, performing arts, education, health, information communication and technology, manufacturing, and transportation. And just to highlight two great things happening, there's a lot of great things happening, but James Bueno and his transportation pathway just refurbished a police car for Morro Bay Police Department, and they're pretty happy about that. And then Peggy Flynn is working with Cal Poly to come up with a sustainable modern ag farm design, and I think she just got a plan today. So there's a lot of great things happening in these pathways. At San Luis High, we're doing the same kind of work. We have pathways in agriculture, media, education, engineering, fashion, interior design, hospitality, information communication and technology, manufacturing, transportation, building and construction trades. And we've been working on sequencing their courses as well. Two highlights for San Luis High. Daniel Lemkuhl, who went to Skills USA and I think he competed internationally, was recently in New Times with a great article on career technical education, so that's something great to read. And then highlighting arts and media, Sheree Jones' video broadcasting is one of the best ones in the county, and we have other video teachers, media teachers, coming to see how she sets that up. So those are some successes that we're having. Oh, we're talking about marketing. So we have some brochures that these are made for parents and students. They highlight pictures of our students on the front and inside, talk about what jobs you can get in these pathways right out of high school, 2-year degree or 4-year or on. And we're hoping to use these in registration that's coming up. On the county level, I'm part of a team for the Slope Partners, one of the grants, and I would want you to know that we have 6 business advisory committees up and running. Those committees are run by 7 to 9 business members, and teachers are starting to interact with these business members and get externships and guest speakers and internships and job shadowing. So that kind of that's happening. They're focusing on work-based learning, pathway review, and career technical student organizations in the business advisory councils. I want you to know that we have really trying to develop a thoughtful plan, having ongoing conversations with district administration, teachers, counselors, the business advisory council, even Anthony, to create our thoughtful spending plan, using all the grant monies in a kind of a braided way to strengthen and develop our pathways, of course following the labor market data to make sure that we're on track with what jobs that this, are needed to be filled by our students. And to tie it all up, we have some new indicators for high school success in the high schools. We're calling them career and college indicators. The ones specific to CTE would be having 2 or more years of dual enrollment or being a CTE completer. So you should know that at Morro Bay, right now we have 3 classes that are dual enrolled with Cuesta. Computer apps, video operations, and the Get Focused, Stay Focused. And at San Luis High, we have video operations, Get Focused, Stay Focused, an auto course, welding, engineering drawing, and an internal combustion engine. We have a couple more in the works for next year, and it's great to be able to partner with Cuesta in these efforts. So we're doing a lot of great things with CTE, continuing to strengthen and develop so that our students can be career and college ready. Thank you.
That's it, yeah.
Ms. Moore, you did a terrific job presenting at CSBA.
Don't go away.
Questions?
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Well, I was struggling with finding the right presentation, and I was going to ask you about Capstone, but I saw the flow, the introduction, concentration, Capstone, and it makes a lot more sense now to me. Thank you. But I have to ask you, is in career tech, has there been any focus on preliminary education for aviation since the...
That's great.
There's going to be a crisis in shortages of commercial pilots.
That's a great question. I think there are some schools across California that have an aviation pathway. I think it would fall under the transportation, and certainly they could start by just learning about engines.
Yeah, you have a nice airplane on the transportation logo. That's why I had to ask.
Yeah,
so.
They do.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks, Liz.
Okay.
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I again just want to... say how excited I am about the possibility for the dual enrollment and the benefit that it'll be to the students and the push that the state's putting on that and changing laws and making things easier.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see we're already started.
Yeah, we are. We have some good opportunities ahead of us.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Not yet, Mr. Unger.
Well, I was just going to tell Mr. Millar that the high school of which I am an alum has a aviation career path, and somebody actually gave them an old Cessna that they can work on. Hopefully, it's in the quad, but they're not flying it out of there, I'm afraid. You know, and one thing that I don't know if it's I just want to throw this out there as something to think about, and I don't know if it's something that's appropriate to CTE exactly, but I would sure like to see something related to teacher academies and to try to get our young people interested and involved in becoming teachers and educators?
Well, we do have the education pathway, and both the schools have the students, like at San Luis, they have the Tiny Tigers, are working with the preschool smaller, and at Morro Bay, they go to one of the elementary schools, I think, Del Mar.
Right, that's true.
So that is happening.
Great.
Thank you, Ms. Moore.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to 10.03, Measure D, approved design build contracts with Acme Construction Company, Inc.
While we're waiting, Liz, you guys did a great job on those brochures, by the way.
So now kind of a discussion about the actual contract itself. So this is, I won't say it's like having a baby because it took us 9 months, but it was a painful process, let me tell you, to kind of put this together because it's relatively new in terms of, you know, putting this together, the competition aspect, all those things. And the classic part is when we were done, the brand new lease-leaseback language that makes lease-leaseback legal had every single point of what we just did in design-build. Other than with design-build, it has the bridging docks. And then you go from there, design at least leaseback, you would go, you know, all the way through design and then just have the contractor part of it. But so in terms of how this works, again, it's a set. We've set the contract amounts based on those estimates, okay, that came from the bridging documents. We have a set profit margin. We have a set general conditions that we have established. We have the set design fees that have been established. From there, we basically enter into the agreement, should the board pass the contract tonight. We begin to sit down with the firm. We lay out the projects. We begin with the architect, with the contractor. We proceed with the project as kind of have been set out. They begin to design them. We get back together, of course, working together hand in hand throughout the process at kind of design development. And it's kind of the check-in point. All of our they begin design on all the projects at both sites. Check-in point, where are we at? What are their estimates saying? We may send them back out to the Saylor estimate to combine and check and make sure that we are on the same page in terms of those. At that point, we kind of come together and are there things that we need to you know, basically, let, you know, to stay in that $32, $38 million mark, are there things we need to cut back on? Where are we going to do those cuts? How are we going to do it? So, again, that whole process is happening throughout the design phase. We're trying to keep our budget together where we're at and again, talking as we go. From there, at DSA, the documents would go in, they get designed, they come back out, and the design build team has then put together kind of what they assume the cost is going to be. So they actually have an estimate that they'll do after the DSA goes out. They'll come back to us at that point, kind of share that with us, and then we will kind of look at that. Once it's finally approved by DSA, we will go out, and they actually do kind of a they'll bid all of those other subcontractors that tie to it, and you actually come up with a price at that point. So though we have the NTE price, we're checking in kind of at price throughout the process, but once we have it out of DSA, we actually do the bidding. So with all the other subcontractors throughout, so again, though we have the MEP group, those are all kind of set. We'll be working at setting their rates of the costs associated with it, but there are other subcontractors that will be bid. So this contract has a whole system that's built in to it, to where those bids, you know, kind of tie in. You basically take the lowest bid, and so it all develops into basically a price per portion of the contract. So each of the schools is broken down into increments. So the 300 buildings, the Woodshop, Ag, and Tim Faye's classroom, design classroom. Those are all one increment. The 100 building is an increment. The 500 building. So they're all kind of pieces as they go through. So as we go and we finally get those projects accomplished, because we're not going to bid them all at the same time. We're not going to build them all. So as they come out of design, as they come out of DSA, and again, the 300 building, we're probably going to push forward quickly because of the fire damage in that room, those types of things. So it's going to that room will probably be done, come out before the 100 building, which could take longer at DSA. So kind of the nuance of this is that we have that NTE price. So as we do each increment, we have to be careful in keeping the overall budget in line like we've been doing with our design bid build work throughout the time. So again, the difference with this is we have those set profit, general conditions, architecture, design fees. So that part is established. We know what it is. In terms of how the subcontract bids come out, it will still depend. I mean, those are still going to be, you know, bidded out types of things. And Ron can probably kind of attest to that process of how that works a little bit. But this contract basically sets that entire sequence of events into a document. So if you've looked at it, it's rather large. In terms of how the whole flow goes, Mr. Palazzo actually created kind of a spreadsheet for it, which for each kind of phase, each of the different bidding, mechanical, electrical, plumbing contractors. So Ron, myself, Mr. Palazzo, Deidre Sakai from DWK, as well as Acme came to San Francisco. We met, we sat down, we went through the entire contract together, made sure that we, you know, all the different factors were tied in, all legally binding. It's been a process. So we've been working on this for 9 months to finally come up with a document that you have in front of you that you know, advisor blessed. You know, we as a district feel like we can work and make sense. We can do this, and actually the contractor. So there's a lot of give and take on the contractor side to enter into an agreement like this, because there are some unknowns in terms of how this is going to, you know, kind of flow out, because it really puts the onus on them to keep at that not to exceed price, and that we keep that overall amount that we've established as kind of our guiding light throughout the process. So again, a lot of local people tied in, so that will be helpful, I think, in terms of their organization of the company itself. There's also the potential of bringing in outside subcontractors as well, in terms of out of the area. I think, You know, right now we're probably in a decent zone, although we have seen some bids that are a little higher, some that are low. But I do worry about a couple of years from now in terms of when all of the bond dollars hit from Lucy Amar and Paso Robles have just passed and Santa Maria, those types of things. It's going to be interesting kind of in those out years. So, I mean, to me, this is, in terms of the system that's been set up, it's probably the most transparent, the most, you know, in terms of getting the best price aspect of it, it really sets that kind of in motion for us, versus just a design bid build project where you're hoping that you get enough bids, you're hoping that it comes in at a lower amount. You know, this really helps us kind of set those prices. So that's kind of in a nutshell the overall kind of how it goes. Mr. Holtman, you want to tie in anything in terms of the process wise or?
Well, in a nutshell, the whole exercise is how many variables can we eliminate and get down to a fixed number of challenges. And the problem with design bid build is you have nothing but variables the day you go out to bid. You're really not sure what the plans will produce in the way of a price, and you have no idea who's going to build it. So this system simply reduces those things down. And thank goodness we got our pricing in before the state bond passed. Because contractors, when they're busy, they ratchet the margin up because they can. And so these numbers were all fixed pre-November 8th, thank goodness. So, and they're set for the duration of our projects. So we can expect a very predictable result. The reason the MEP, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, are pre-selected and pre-qualified is that's really the bulk of the major cost items. And they're present in every job. The subcontractor bid out, which is a separate piece, picks up all of the variables. I mean, one job may have tile, the next job may not. So those things are captured in the variables. And it would be virtually impossible to select all those because not every trade is present on every set of plans. So the whole object here is we've reduced our variables down to a very small number, and we have a predictable delivery system.
And we've locked in a key contractor and our MEP subs. I mean, so that having those people on our team as part of this process, we've kind of locked them in. So that's part of what's nice now prior to a couple of years from now, you know, having that being unknown, it's definitely a positive thing for us. And so we were happy with the team. I think in all of our experiences so far with the Mastagni family, that, you know, both Mr. Palazzo and myself, the interactions we have so far have been really super positive in terms of where we're headed, what's going, the contract negotiations, just their knowledge. We feel good to start. And does that mean we're not going to have any issues? Does that mean we're not going to have price increases or sub-bids that are too high, or there's going to be negotiations and haggling along the way? No, I'm not saying that. There's still going to be that same unknown construction, what happens. This does provide for a little bit of that, though, in terms of that design process, right? They're in the design room with us. They can tell us right then whether things are going to work or not, or if there's better ideas about cutting scope or cutting price throughout that process. You know, part of the contract gives them time to go into our buildings to see what the issues are structurally, asbestos, you know, what are the things that we're going to find that, you know, design bid builds may not be in the design. You know, they may, you know, as they go into the project, as they're constructing it, they find these things behind the walls and kind of like what, you know, C.L. Smith, those types of things, versus this contract puts a little bit of the onus on the design build team to do that prior to the bidding, to that final increment price that we decide on. So all of that should, you know, for the most part, should be handled prior to getting to that point. Doesn't mean that there's not going to be things that still come up, or, you know, we dig a hole out by the tennis courts and it's full of water because it's an underground pond. You know, those types of things could still happen. But this, again, like Mr. Holcomb said, does cut back on those variables. So we feel good about it. I think overall, the overall contract in terms of for the district itself, where it puts us in putting this together, we feel good about the team. And so we want to get started. It's, you know, it's time is kind of a waste before we want to get some projects going, get this happening, and make those great improvements at both sites that we know they need.
Before we go to the board, let me take it to the public. Is there anyone who'd like to comment on this item? Mr. Millar.
Well, first, I'd like to acknowledge your courage in mansplaining childbirth at the beginning of your presentation.
Yes, thank you.
So I'm thinking back to all of the hard work that you guys did assembling, what's the term? You know, like the kind of tile they're going to use, the kind of fittings they're going to use, and all that stuff.
District standards.
He is earning his money tonight. So will those district standards that everybody works so hard on, will they be controlling the design build entity as they go about their work?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you.
It's all tied in.
I just have a question for Mr. Holcomb. In what ways, if any, does this change the change order, volume or process?
Well, when the contractor comes to us and said, hey, the architect missed something, we'll say, gee, that's too bad. I hope you work it out, you know. So it changes it a lot because Ryan alluded to it, but prior to beginning an increment of work, they have to sign off that they've examined the site. We have that in our documents now, but it's amazing. In fact, we have some change orders right now that we have rejected and the contractor gave up on because they didn't examine the site. So, but that's a certification they have to sign off on in this. And whereas design bid build, they were surprised. You mean I actually had to follow that contract, you know? So, but this takes it even one step further where they sign and certify and bond that they understand what they're getting into, each increment, each building. So it's a very controlled process.
Excellent. Thank you.
And they're not working on a huge profit margin. I mean, from you see kind of thing. So it's in their best interest for things to come in at cost like they said they were going to. I mean, it's just really that this machine drives kind of that, keeping the cost at that point that we've established. So that's something that's, again, it's going to take the work of our team to continue to, you know, kind of grind it out with both the architect as well as the contractor as we go through this whole process. But this sets up probably the most transparent way that we could go about doing this work.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. This is an action item, so...
Can I say that?
Excuse me.
Well, I want to congratulate the team. You know, I don't think we as a board, and I don't think most boards understand the complexity of the building process once a bond has been voted on by the public. You know, we're talking, you know, as we know, $170 million here. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for this community. I think from what I've gathered from our team and the process that you guys, that we as a district have gone through, we're ahead of most people in the state. From what you guys have said, and certainly with the team that you've created, I think we're protecting the taxpayers' money, and I think really people are going to we're blazing a trail, I think, for what people could do in the rest of California and what they may want to do if they can get the documents together, which I think we've spent a lot of time trying to do, and if they can get a team that is willing to do the oversight. So I just really want to congratulate everybody on the team for the hard work you've done and finding a way to help control and protect the taxpayers' money.
Thank you. Would you like to make a motion?
Sure. I'll move approval of item number 10.03, approved design build contracts with the Acme Construction Company.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0. Thank you.
I will tell you that our attorney is very interested in having these documents completed. So because I have a feeling a lot of other school districts were going to want to use what we've established with them. So we're in a good place. Thank you.
Well done.
Make a little commission on that, wouldn't it?
They're public documents. So.
We're moving to item number 10.04, nomination to CSBA Delegate Assembly Region 9-C.
Yes, so we have our own Mark Buckman reelected to the CSBA delegate for Region 9C, and there is a current seat holder whose election is coming up, Vicki Mayer, who is a board trustee in Lucia Mar, and she has expressed her interest to serve another term. So we are here tonight to place a nomination in her favor, if that's the will of the board.
Shall we go to the public first? Is there anyone who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, if I can, I've worked with Vicki now for 2 to 3 years. She's been at every meeting. She reads her agenda. She's very active, and I think she's made a great contribution to both our local region and to CSBA in general.
Mr.
I would move. I would move item 10.04, which is the nomination of Vicki Maher to the Region 9 to go forward as a nominee for Region 9C.
I'll second.
And Mr. Quisenberry, we have a nomination by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It passes 7-0. Congratulations to Vicki. And we're moving on to item number 10.05. Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. Good evening. I have three board policies to bring forward for your consideration tonight. Just to let you know, all of these are legal changes and are in response to state legislation that has been put into place. They are required by January 1st. I am only bringing forward the board policy, but this would allow us to begin to analyze our administrative regulations and begin to look at that more closely. And all language that I'm bringing forward tonight is taken directly from the California School Board Association's recommendations. So the first one to consider tonight would be suicide prevention. This is a completely new policy. It does focus on three different areas: curriculum related to this, staff development, and then I kind of consolidated the third idea to how we respond to that. Adopting this does kind of give us direction so that we could begin to work on what our administrative regulations look like and also what it could look like for age-appropriate information for elementary, as well as maybe incorporating this into health education curriculum for our secondary grades. This is listed as the first reading, so any comments?
Take this to the public. Is there anyone who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned elementary school, because that was a question I had. What it talks about is suicide prevention instructions shall be incorporated in the health education curriculum in the secondary grades. I believe that about 2 years ago in Los Osos, we had a sixth or seventh grader who unfortunately committed suicide. So you know, seventh grade is obviously considered secondary. But I'm wondering what we could do to start addressing this issue in our younger children as well.
That's a great point. I do think earlier in that paragraph, I like how it starts to aim us in that direction, as it states that we shall promote the healthy mental, emotional, and social development of students, including the development of problem-solving skills, coping skills, and self-esteem. I think a lot of those issues would be very appropriate for elementary. Thinking about steps to respect and thinking about how we teach students to have a trusted adult that you can speak to and how you deal with emotionally stressful issues and that kind of thing, I think would be a great way to address this within elementary.
Yes, this is very important. Is there any other comment anyone would like to make on this?
Kimberly, in the packet it actually had the board policy and the AR. And I'm getting a sense that the AR may be something that we should not approve right now, because you're...
We don't approve the ARs.
Okay. Thanks.
You bet.
I was told sometimes you like to see those just for your information or to further build your knowledge around the board policy.
Right.
But I do think we need a little more work in that, and that's that. Just the board policy is forward for your approval tonight.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
You bet.
This can be an action item if... we did go to...
You want to do it, Meryl? Go
ahead. I see Mrs. Sheffer's live on.
Mrs. Sheffer? I would move approval of the new board policy 5141.52.
And Walt, was that Mr. Millar? Was that you who seconded? So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0.
Thank you. The next one is related to students and non-discrimination and harassment. This is an existing policy, and there is only a one-sentence change I'm noticing here. It says that this policy shall apply to all acts related to school activity or to school attendance occurring within a school district, and to acts, and this is the part that changes, and to acts which occur off campus or outside of school-related or school-sponsored activities, but which may have an impact or create a hostile environment at school. I would say, you know, it does kind of expand the policy to include acts off campus. However, I do believe that if it's impacting a hostile environment at school, it's something that we would want to address anyway. I would recommend adding that to the policy.
I'd like to take this to the public. Is there anyone who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. The sentence which that we've added it caused me to wonder how we enforce that. It's the same as the fact that we're responsible for students home to school, but we really aren't there, so we don't have the ability to enforce what bullying or whatever might happen home to school. So I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
I apologize for interrupting. The way I see that is when it has an impact or creates a hostile environment at school. So what I see is when administration, when teachers, when they're seeing an issue and an impact happening at school, and although it may be related to something that originated or started off campus, they see that it's having an impact, then this gives them the direction to go ahead and address that.
So would this be sort of focusing on a cyber bullying kind of?
It very may well include something like social media or something when it starts somewhere else, but they can see that it's having an impact once students are at school.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Well, along those lines, I would say that sentence is actually kind of follows a line of cases that have been decided both in California and nationally regarding the purview of school districts to insert themselves. And even though we may not have the capacity to detect these things by having it in the board policy, when they do come to our attention, we'll be empowered to take action on them. And then the second thing I wanted to ask you about, Kim, is the under non-discrimination and harassment, there's a red paragraph in there, too, and I was wondering if that reflects new language.
Oh, thank you. Page B, yes. Regardless of whether a complaint complies with the writing timeline or other formal filing requirements, all complaints alleging unlawful discrimination, including harassment and intimidation, bullying, shall be investigated and prompt action taken to stop the discrimination, prevent the occurrence, and address any continuing impact on students. Absolutely. Thank you.
So, if I may,
yes, Mrs. Sheffer.
My question then has to do with the new paragraph that's on this page, taking it together with the previous sentence. If there are complaints then about something that occurred off campus, but again is impacting behavior or events on campus, what kind of duty does the do? Is the district's duty to deal with the impact on campus or to conduct some sort of investigation as to what may have occurred off campus. What does this do to expand our responsibility, the district's liability, the district's, what we have to do that with things that occur that don't even occur on our campus? It seems kind of vague, like now we're taking on another, what could be quite large level of responsibility for things that may not occur on our sites.
I'm not positive I can answer to the liability. However, I do think it speaks pretty specifically to things that have an impact or create that environment at our school. So I think part of what you do whenever you realize that that a situation has occurred is you start to look into what's causing this. I'm not positive I could really answer to the liability that adds to us. I think our responsibility is to address the school impact.
Okay, so to what extent do we do that now? So if a student says, when I was playing with Susie yesterday at home at my, or in the backyard, Susie hit me, and now I don't want to be in the same room with Susie. Is it our responsibility to investigate the entire scenario?
I think we do look into what's the cause of this and what is, that's what administrators are doing currently,
and
is looking into
now.
The cause of it.
Okay.
Mrs. Roger?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
Dr. Prater?
I just can't help myself. I think this, we do this, but now it's in the language and policy, which then, it puts, I think, more intentionality to it. It's certainly going to, I think, the work of administrators are seemingly never ending. However, the impact this has on the classroom, that first round of that's impact on teachers is significant. So that oftentimes teachers are managing these things and trying to figure out, how this is. That might be the box. I got to turn that off. But I imagine this will create all kinds of conversation at the site level about how to best manage this swiftly, and because it does make prompt action taken. I think we're already doing that, but now this adds another layer. Susie at the park over the weekend, so now it enforces it here to stop the discrimination. So it'll be interesting how this plays out.
So this is a first reading, but we have the option to waive the second reading and approve the revisions if the board so desires.
And I think if we have a deadline of January 1st, then I'll go ahead and move approval of board policy 5145.3 as amended.
I will second that.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes again 7-0.
I have a quick comment, though, that I was hoping to
get. Your mic, perhaps.
On some of these board policies that, and we are tending to get into a mode of approving them on the first reading, and this is really the first time that the public's also seen them. And so on some of these, and in many other districts, they go to a second to reading just to allow the public to have seen it and to react to it.
Yeah, I take your point. Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Does anyone have thoughts about that?
Okay.
Well, we have a chance to think about that for this next item, which is 10.07, the proposed revision to board policy, 5145.7. Thank you. This one sentence is a change here, which would take kind of interim measures, and we wouldn't, in my opinion, really want to wait to investigate. So the way this is worded is that the principal or designee to whom a complaint of harassment is reported shall investigate the complaint, and then here's the change, whether or not a formal written complaint is filed, and when needed, must take interim measures to ensure safety of any student complaint or victim of sexual harassment. I would agree and think that this that we would want to begin an investigation and then request the formal written complaint, but we wouldn't want to delay that investigation just waiting on a formal written complaint.
I'd like to take this to the public. Is there anyone in the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one, Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I support the change to it. I did have a question, though, that was not reflected in the original language we had, and that was I wonder if we need to make it one concern I had was, do we need to make it clear that a report to a principal or designee doesn't abrogate the need to file a CWS report when necessary? And so I understand this, but I would hate to have anyone unclear on that fact, because it is their responsibility to file the report, whether or not they report it to their principal or designee, who it does not fall on them.
Mm-hmm. I might suggest that is noted in the AR.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
I've already mentioned this to Kim, but on the bottom of page one, in that full paragraph at the bottom, I would recommend that a school employee to whom a complaint is made shall immediately report to report to the principal or designee. In this day and age, to wait 24 hours doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Sheffer.
I would support that revision.
Yes, Mr. Cousin.
You don't think immediately makes it unclear, open to interpretation, whereas 24 hours sets a definite time limit?
Well, I think immediately sets a definite time limit, too. Immediately. All due haste. That's my view. I think 24 hours is too long. And the other part that made me talk to Kim about that is it's linked with sexual assault and sexual harassment. So if somebody's had a sexual assault and is reported to an employee, it needs to be reported to the principal designee immediately. I guess the ARs could handle what immediately means. Should that be necessary? Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I just would think that if a student reported it to an instructor at the beginning of a two-hour block class, the instructor can't leave the classroom, so maybe immediately could mean as soon as is practicable, or but not less than or not more than, you know, by the end of the school day, or something that allows the teacher not to be in trouble if they don't leave their class to go and report it immediately. Immediately is immediate. Do you know what I mean, Walter?
I do know exactly what immediately means. I hardly ever do anything immediately, but I do know what it means.
Can you spell it?
I probably could spell it. I think for me the linkage to sexual violence is the key piece here. A teacher is going to go, okay, you've had sexual violence perpetrated on you, but as soon as we finish the history class, you know, we'll get this reported.
Maybe we need to differentiate between the violence and the harassment then, in terms of the incumbency of reporting, how quickly it has to be reported.
That would be one solution. I don't know. I don't know. Immediately seems so clear to me. Maybe we should bring it back with the.
But this has the January 1st deadline on it.
This is a legal change required by January 1st. Perhaps immediate and no longer than 24 hours. Would that?
Sure.
Or no longer than this current school day, I heard mentioned as well.
Or maybe insert, if possible, immediately.
There's similar anchors to the 24 hours that we just, all of us employees, conducted our mandatory reporting training. And in there, it says, I want to say, as soon as possible, no longer than 24 hours. So there is that window, but it's real clear that you need to act immediately. But the 24 hours is the ceiling in terms of the reporting.
Well, I can see where we would want to make the language in the board policy consistent with what the staff is being trained to do. But sooner rather than later. But I'll let you guys work out the.
So immediate and no longer than 24 hours along
as soon
that
as possible, I think, was the language, mm-hmm. and no longer than 24 hours. Yes, sir.
Can you
identify yourself?
My name is Tim Jouet. I have a daughter in fifth grade at Pateco Elementary. I have not been to a meeting before. You guys do a good job. I can see why there aren't a lot of people here, but I'm not familiar with this policy before. But I think I understand Mr. Miller's discomfort because it says a student has to immediately contact an employee, but it doesn't say the employees have to do anything immediately. My reading is any school employee who observes an incident, that would need to be immediate, not within the 24 hours. Because I can understand the other situation, getting a confidential report, a student maybe after school talking, got to think about it overnight, or they call them at midnight, then they talk to the principal the next day. So I think that it does feel like student immediately, staff, you got 24 hours, and that's a concern, but I see it maybe being in the second one. If a school employee witnesses an incident, stop, history class, whatever. That's how I see it. Maybe change the language. So, thank you.
Well, that is a good point, but I wonder if it still shouldn't be, as Dr. Prater suggested, which is even if it's the student, as soon as possible, but no longer than 24 hours.
Well, I guess for me, sort of, how do we put this? Some of our recent realities suggest that if a person is a victim, certainly of sexual assault, but also of sexual harassment, there is an ongoing exposure for that student to other issues, to other harm by the same perpetrator. So there are reasons why that really needs to be acted on quickly, and so that's kind of why I don't know that we need to get bogged down into how we craft that, but just 24 hours for a sexual assault is way too long.
Mm-hmm. So. I hear as soon as possible, no longer than 24 hours.
Is everyone okay with that verbiage?
Yeah, I'm okay with it, but I'm wondering if there's a sexual assault and if someone is still on our campus, then that would be the immediacy. That would be that would. I don't know why are we getting these board policies with so little time to reflect. I mean, with the due date of January 1st is kind of a little rough. I guess, we've sort of made clear our feelings that we want immediate action if possible. And
I could see the sentence here, any school employee who observes any incident of sexual harassment on any student shall similarly report his or her observation immediately.
Yes. That sounds right. Mrs. Sheffer.
I think for me, one of the concerns I have with the desire to report it immediately is not just reporting that something occurred, but letting the student, the harmed student, know that this is taken very seriously and that immediate help will be sought, rather than saying, thanks for letting me know, I'll talk to someone at the end of the day. I mean, I think that is not a message I want to send to our students. And if it means, saying, let me find someone to cover for me, I'll be right back, and then you and I are going to the office, or whatever needs to be done. I think that the message we want to give our students is that we are there with immediate support for them, that if they trust us to share something that is so personal and so harmful with an adult, to then have that adult say, you know, when we're done talking about, this passage of this book or something that we're reading, I'll deal with it. I just think that in the whole, the message we're giving to to the student is as important that the adults, I'm sorry, handle it properly for the student as much as for any other purpose.
Mm-hmm. Point well taken. So I think adding the immediately to that sentence, and then I made a note for the AR of the message of immediate support to students as well.
And were you also thinking of adding it to the part about the student as well as the teacher? The same urgency to the student line? Any?
Mm-hmm. In that first sentence, it does say shall immediately contact. Is that what you mean?
I was actually looking at any school employee who observes that a student or has a student shall similarly report. Yes, I guess that it does cover both. That's
great.
That's great.
So, I guess I'd like to hear what the final language is going to sound like, please.
Great. So I have, instead of where it says 24 hours, it would say as soon as possible and no longer than 24 hours. And then in this sentence where it says, any school employee who observes any incident of sexual harassment on any student shall similarly report his or her observation to the principal or designee immediately.
Is everyone satisfied with that change? Any other concerns or questions to be raised?
And then again, you'll make sure that this is reinforced with, I'm not going to try to tell you how to do your administrative regulations, but I just I agree that immediately is important, and that from my perspective as a board member, I think that we need to make sure that everyone who reads this and everyone who reads the administrative regulations understands our feelings about it and the need for immediate intervention on behalf of the student.
Noted that. Thanks.
Okay, so do we have the option of taking action at this time? What are our thoughts?
I think we need to do it.
Okay, does anyone want to make a motion?
I'll move approval of board policy 5145.7.
And I'll second.
As amended in the discussion.
Okay. Mark is seconding. So that is a motion made by Mr. Unger and seconded by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 7-0. That passes. Thank you.
Thank
Mrs.
you.
McGrath. 10.08.
So this item is to recommend a 1% increase for our two assistant superintendents, consistent with our increases that we have given to our other employee groups. As you have seen in the board reports that we have done, we're fortunate to have excellent salaries across the organization, and this has allowed us to attract and retain the best employees, and I think you've seen tonight some excellent examples from Mr. Pinkerton's presentations, and we're really lucky to have two outstanding assistant superintendents. It's important to keep all of our positions competitive and in alignment with the other positions in our organization, and so for those reasons, I'd like to recommend that you approve this increase.
I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone who would like to address this issue? And back to the board.
I'll move approval of item 10.09.
I'll second that.
I'm sorry, was that... I'm sorry, 10.08. I apologize.
Yes, so we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Newman. And 10.09, we're approve a new employment contract for the Assistant Superintendent of Educational Services.
Yes, this is obviously not the ideal celebration for Mrs. McGrath because it's coming prematurely because of our recent news with Mr. Robinette. And Mr. Robinette has served our district so well for 25 years and has fallen ill and is going to retire at the end of this year. And so knowing that we have so much transitional work to do, important work to do, I think it's important to move swiftly on this appointment, knowing that we will very likely consolidate our district office staff in the coming year, and this will help transition that smoothly and effectively. And so that's why I have this contract before you, to appoint Mrs. McGrath as our Assistant Sup of Educational Services.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Bring it back to the board. Mr.
I've had the opportunity of working with Mrs. McGrath on in several different ways, on CTE, on technology. She's been wonderful in helping me understand some of the things that are going on at the secondary level. And so unless there's further discussion, I'd like to move approval of the contract.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Ms. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 7-0. That passes unanimously. And I would just like to also just to send our love to Mr. Robinette, as we're thinking of him right now. And we're moving on to
And our congratulations to Kim.
And our congratulations to Kim, of course. She's the hardest working woman in show business right now. 10.10. We're going to... this is the... we're going to approve an amendment to the superintendent employment agreement. And we're going to the public. Would anyone care to comment? I beg your pardon?
Do we need to present this?
This is a discussion and approval in this agreement.
What?
So, yes. So we.
So we have the board subcommittee that.
Well, the board subcommittee.
Oh.
Refer to this. Thank you. That's it. There we go. Thank you. Could you?
Okay. Thank you. The board tasked the subcommittee to explore through interest-based negotiations with our superintendent how to resolve the board's interest in retaining his services for as long as is feasible, legal, and possible. And in order to do that, we wanted to provide assistance to the superintendent to secure housing here in our district, if at all possible, but in this area. And to that effort, we, through negotiations with Dr. Prater and consultation between the subcommittee and the board in general, and Mike Smith, our attorney at Lozano Smith, he drafted, according to our directions, an addendum to Dr. Prater's contract, and that's what's before us today for approval. And I would like to move approval if it's not premature. I think it accomplishes some extremely important things for the district, from the consistency, quality of our leadership as we embark into some really difficult period of time. I think what Dr. Prater has provided us over the last 6 years is superior leadership, innovative ahead of the curve guidance. Just one example, and I know PG&E is a high item and of interest right now, but I think even more important than that were the 10 initiatives for student achievement, which for us put us way ahead of the LCAP game, if you will, not a drug, a pejorative, and put us in a good position to both be ready to transition to LCAP. And I think that, among other things that Dr. Prater has done for us, makes it critically important that we retain his leadership. And I'm pleased that the board was able to figure out in negotiations with Dr. Prater how to assist him in remaining here with us in this district. So I think we've accomplished our retention objective for Dr. Prater, and hopefully we've helped him with some of his interests as far as his family and housing is concerned. So I would move approval of the addendum.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter?
So I believe Mr. Millar had made a motion, which I would second at this time, if there's no further discussion.
Is there further discussion on the board? I concur with those comments that Mr. Millar made, of course, and add Measure D into the mix as well.
I'd like to just mention that, and I wasn't on the committee, so I don't know the particulars as well, but it's my understanding the superintendent has worked on some financial changes in his relationship on his previous contract, that he's giving up some things in order to make this work. Is that correct?
Yes, it was very much bilateral, and Dr. Prater is going to forego significant income for the next several years. And then after the period of time that we're trying to retain him as our superintendent expires, then he will have some assistance with the reduction of the mortgage based on some of the items of income that he's foregoing. And I hope that answers the question.
All right. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar.
And this is all available for public review. So it's out there. Thank you.
Yep. Okay.
We have a motion. I'm sorry. Ellen was a second. I'm sorry. I didn't hear that, Ellen. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes 7-0. And we're moving on to the action consent items. So please, if you would like to pull any of these items, we have 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, approval of tentative agreement with SEIU. 11.03, acceptance of donations.
Pull, please.
Pulling that item. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.05, approval of purchase orders and Cal card.
Pull.
We're pulling that item. And 11.06, approval of warrants and payroll.
Pull.
And we're pulling that item. 11.07, disposal of surplus property. And 11.08, Measure D, approved contract addendum for advisory oversight services.
Pull.
I should have been writing those down. Sorry. So we have a lot of pulled items. We're now looking to approve items 11.01, 11.02, 11.03.
Acceptance of donations was pulled by Marilyn.
That's Marilyn, okay.
1, 2, and 4.
We're looking to approve 11.04.
I think that was good. 11.05.
We're 11.06. We're pulling 11.07 and 8. Is that correct?
7 is good. 8 we pulled.
Okay. 8 we pulled. Okay. I'm missing one. There was a third. Yes, there was a third, though. Which one? Which was
11.08?
I'm sorry. 03 and 04.
Donations.
Zero
so it was 03, 05, 06, and 08 were pulled, I believe.
Five,
is that correct,
six.
Is that what you have?
Yes.
Okay, Walter, you pulled 5, 6, and 8. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So we're looking for approval of items 11.01, 11.02, 11.04, 11.07, and 11.08.
I move approval of item 11.01, 11.02, 11.04, and 11.07.
Correct.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 11 or 7. We don't have reason time to go home yet.
We have the biggest word in California.
Exactly. That passes 7-0. Mr. Millar?
Actually, I think
Mrs. Roger.
Rogers goes first. Donations.
Mrs. Roger?
Well, I need to speak to my polling donations.
Okay.
Okay, I pulled donations, but I'm going to need to ask for some help, some indulgence and some help, because my computer died a while back.
Let's see.
The reason that I pulled it, I'm mindful that we can't publicly acknowledge all donations that we receive, but I recall seeing that I believe it was our CSEA local. I don't know what the local number is. 620, CSEA Local,
yes.
620,
yes. Right.
Donated $500, I believe, to Special Olympics.
That's
correct.
Yes.
Oh, sweet.
And I just wanted to make a publicly acknowledge that donation as being very charitable and kind on their part. And having said that, I'll move approval of this item, which I can't cite by name or number.
11.03. I'll second.
Thank you, Mark.
I'll second. Motion on 11.03.
Okay, so we have... Oh.
And then we have Mr. Millar's pulls.
We
need to
do
them individually.
Yep.
Okay. So we're looking for approval.
Okay,
so we have a
motion by
Mrs. Roger, a second by Mr. Quisenberry. For the acceptance of donations 11.03. All in favor?
Aye.
That passes 7-0. And now we're going, Mr. Millar.
I can deal with 11.05 and 11.06 very quickly. I learned something at CSBA. I have to recuse myself because there are payments to PMSM Architect and my wife works there.
You
have to state your reason. And what I found out about regular agenda items, you have to state your reason and leave the room. But there's an exception for consent agenda,
really?
Where you don't have to actually leave. Even though I would leave if you guys...
No.
It's important
if we'd let you.
Yeah, I'll quit pulling stuff. And then, so anyway, I have to recuse myself on 11.05 and 11.06.
I move approval of items 11.05 and 11.06.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer on items 11.05 and 11.06. All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, that makes sense. Passes 6-6 with one abstention. That would be Mr. Millar. And finally, we have 11.08.
The reason I pulled that item is I wanted to, first of all, acknowledge the fact that when we first hired Mr. Holcomb, it was on an interim basis, one-year contract. Mm-hmm. I think he's done a remarkably good job for us, and I'm pleased to see that we have lassoed him for another 5 years, which should be about when we're done.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe. So, anyway, I'll move approval of item 11.08.
And I'll second.
I was going to say, as the Wizard of Oz said, I think the man needs a testimonial. Because I don't think that we could be at the place we're at. And I think all the discussion we had about Measure D and design build tonight really is a testimony to what you've done for us, your representation as of the board, as well as the rest of the staff. So I want to thank you personally for this, your work.
Okay, let's heap it on. I think that Mr. Holcomb has already probably earned the full value of his contract in the cost savings that he's affected for us, and that he has really proven to be a fearless and aggressive advocate for the interests of the district and the taxpayers who are funding Measure D. So I'm delighted that he's decided to stay another 5 years, or willing to be contracted for another 5 years. And I believe we have a motion and a second.
Yes, we do. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Roger on 11.08. All in favor?
Aye.
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 So that passes 7-0. Yes. And then, so we're moving now on to the action consent agenda. Oh, we did that?
Yep.
Sorry. Let's get down here. Okay, now we're to advanced agenda. 12 Does anyone have advanced agenda items? Reports by board members. So any reports by board members?
Yeah. Sure.
I guess it's only you, Mr. Unger. Oh, and Mr. Buckman. Yes. Mr. Unger?
Sure. Well, I want to thank you all for helping make the CSBA annual conference a successful conference. I think it really was successful, and there were some difficult discussions that people engaged in following some of the things that they heard, and I think it's a good thing. And mm-hmm. I think I was really pleased about the way it worked out. Our group, San Luis Coastal, actually had several presentations that they made, and most were well attended. Most, I think, had people of interest. I went to the Golden Bell ceremony Saturday afternoon, and clearly there are some things that we're doing that could be Golden Bell winners. Mm-hmm. Just something else I want to bring up. I, as you may or may not know, I'm a student teacher supervisor at Cal Poly, and I just wanted to let you know that one of the things they're working on at Cal Poly is using the Danielson framework for their student teacher observations. And when people talk about the Danielson framework, they talk about what we're doing here at San Luis Coastal and how effective it's been for the teachers. One of the things that was talked about today was how difficult it is to be a level four, and how rare that, really, it's an honor to be considered a level four educator in any place, and that the expectation is nobody is there all the time. So, again, we're really, I think, ahead of the game on that. And then the other thing I really wanted to do is I wanted to just pay some, and I think there were several of us that went to Mr. Gaddy's class, and I won't talk about that, but I went to Mr. Mamarella's class at Morro Bay High School, where it was his advanced placement junior English class, where they were doing debates. He invited me in, and they had three topics that I can't even imagine discussing when I was in high school. The first was, should families be in the United States be limited to having two children? The second was about animal experimentation for drugs, and then the third was, should prostitution be legalized? I will just say that the prostitution legalization one would have taken effect on February 14th, but that's sort of beside the point.
It's Valentine's Day.
But the thing I really wanted to compliment the students that were engaged in the debates, because they really did it in a respectful, mature, thoughtful manner. The kinds of discussions and the things that they were talking about and the ways they were talking about them, just it was such a mind-blowing, great experience to hear from these kids. Again, just things that I would have been giggling about, you know, and they just took very matter-of-factly, guys and girls talking about very difficult subjects. So I really want to give kudos to Mr. Mamarella's class and him and his students.
Thank you. And Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I've got a page and a half written here, so I'm going to get it down to just a few sentences. Just for Walter. I did get up to San Luis High School, I think 2 days after the arson, and spent some time with the principal, Leslie O'Connor. I have to tell you, that was a really scary sight. When you think about just a few hours, you know, in the daytime, there were students in there, and it was just like, it was bombed out. It was just really shook me deeply. He praised classified staff, the BG&T, and evidently those guys were just, I mean, hours and hours at work. So I just also compliment you for that. I did get to attend the CSBA conference with my fellow board members. Two of the workshops were particularly interesting to me. One was the LCAP put on by Monterey County Office of Education, and they have a form that they've come up with, a template for looking at the progress of what they're doing and for reporting back to their stakeholder groups, the groups that they met with. And I thought that was pretty interesting since we were already talking about that. And the second was the ACLU did a workshop on linking digital instruction to the Williams Act, which talks about sufficiency of textbooks. And they gave us some interesting examples, but I'll just give you the one I thought was best. Cowchilla School District, in order to get digital access or internet access to their students, at the end of the day takes their school buses and moves them around in the community, parks them overnight with Wi-Fi access so that the kids in those communities, in those neighborhoods, can have Wi-Fi access. So CSBA was a good learning place. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
I got a chance to also go to CSBA and to go to Baywood, thanks to the intervention of Mrs. Holmes, the lawgiver. And it was very good. I hadn't been there in a while, and I appreciated being able to do that. And just a personal note to add on to what Chris said, I was one of seven children in a Catholic Navy family, and my dad once remarked that he'd gone from, this is during the zero population growth movement, he'd gone from being a pillar of the church to the enemy of society in just a few years. And the last thing I will say is that prostitution is not a victimless crime.
Exactly. And that, and you know what was interesting? It was the women in the class that really... It was really the women in the class that were the most passionate about prostitution not being a victimless crime. Yeah.
We have, for informational purposes, another item just for you to read on your own time there. And
talk about Mr. Gaddy's class?
Sure.
Mr. Gaddy, yeah.
Yeah, that was very impressive. We've lost everyone from PG&E here, but shall I just say that the straw vote taken at the end of the class was 35 in favor, 35 in favor of keeping Diablo Canyon open in some way,
yeah.
and one opposed. So we'll see where that takes the future. Mrs. Rogers.
Well, I just would add to that the question was, should we use nuclear power? And the students, they had a presentation model where they had two circles, an inner and an outer circle, and the students on the inner circle were actually contributing to the discussion, and they were being fed questions or facts by the students seated behind them, and then they switched places in the circle. Is there a name for that, Mr. Millar?
Yes. No, I'm sorry. I'm being
irreverent?
Not Mr. Millar.
I was not on task. I'm sorry.
Okay. And it was really interesting the way, you know, we I think there were four. Mr. Questenberry was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, Mr. Unger, myself, Dr. Prater was there, John Lindsay from PG&E was there, another woman from PG&E. I mean, there were really, you know, a lot of people there observing, some of them in suits, and the students were absolutely unfazed by the fact that we were there. It seemed to me that they just went ahead and engaged with one another in a really terrific way, where they presented, you know, pros and cons of nuclear power. Now, you could tell that they had previously had a presentation by PG&E. For pro-nuclear power. And I think that was kind of apparent in the where they came down on the whole issue in the final voting. But it was... and I thought Mr. Gaddy handled it really well, the way he prompted and then backed off and let the students really engage and handle the discussion themselves. It was well worth going to. And so, you know, kudos to him, and and the way his instructional model for that particular class exercise was terrific.
Yes, indeed.
Did a great job.
Well, with that, we adjourn until January 12th in study in a Measure D study session. So, thank you, Michael. Yes, we should wish everyone a happy holiday. Indeed.